Some people are asking how to request voice on a Mac. Does anybody know?
Get a PC.
Yeah, that's not really the instant option, Craig.
Jeff, Jarrett, and Joe are in here, so I guess we should just get this started.
All right.
Aw, yeah.
Hey, everyone, how's it going?
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
So I guess we're going to run this just like the last TeamSpeak, except for one major difference. We are not going to be lying to all of you.
Yes.
Aw.
All right, guys. So, yeah, here we've got myself, Jeff LaPere, a.k.a. Kyle. We've got Jarrett Kale, a.k.a. Jeremy, and Joel Gardner, a.k.a. FPS Doug. And we hope that Miranda Plant, also known as Anastasia, might be showing up later.
All right.
So as I mentioned, you got some people queued for questions?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. I'm just setting a few things up. Just give me a minute, actually. Oh, yeah, you guys feel free to request voice or whatever, and the channel admins, server admins, will just put you on the queue.
I'll remove all the posts, test posts in the queue.
Okay. Okay, Janie's going to be voicing you guys, so Janie, you can feel free to start voicing people.
She already gave an Otaku voice.
I already did. Otaku's got voice.
That's great.
So go ahead, Otaku.
Alright, first of all, I'd like to say to the crew, superb job on the episode 12. I was like staring at my monitor just excited at how much effort you obviously put into that episode, and I really appreciate it. Anyway, my question is, how did you react to the forums post about Kyle is Jeff LaPere months and months before you gave out your real names? What did you think?
Well, our policy was, people can have their theories, and we neither confirm nor deny whether or not I am Jeff LaPere. And, we didn't want to delete any posts that had the truth in it, that indeed I was Jeff LaPere, because that would be, in some sense, confirming it. So, we just let people do a lot of research. I think it was fun for a lot of people to go out on the net and see what they can find out. And, in fact, I guess it was a year ago now, maybe even longer, when Scree and his roommate, Robert, they actually busted us and found a lot of information that we used to have on the web through various archive.org and whatever else, and they found our bios and pictures of old projects that we had done that is certainly not public information. And so they were the first to really bust us and send us all these links. And of course that was after Scree made the famous picture of Jeff LaPere and the Masterer, which was basically proof. It was hilarious to see that, how he busted me with my microphone stand and popper stopper that was in the background of my physics picture, and also by putting black cloth over the face for my physics webpage. That pretty much busted me as being the Masterer. I think it was pretty obvious to a lot of people. One student in my tutorial, actually, when I was teaching physics, asked me if I was the Masterer. So I guess the eyes have it there. But that was basically our policy, is just let people have some fun trying to figure out the identity of the guy behind the camera.
Well, thanks for your time, and keep making good episodes.
Awesome, man. Keep watching.
Next is Black Poison.
Hey, guys. I'd just like to say well done on the episode. This question's for Jeff. I'm kind of like an amateur filmmaker myself, and I was just wondering what editing program you used to make Pure Ownage.
I use Adobe Premiere, which is pretty good for a PC editing suite. The answer to these questions are in the FAQ on the peer ownership page. So you guys might want to have a look at the FAQ before you ask for voice or whatever. But it's cool. It's a pretty good program.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Jeff, I just got a quick follow-up question to that. Have you ever thought of using a Mac or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, Season 2, we definitely have to use a Mac because that's the only pro way to go. I've encountered a lot of problems, actually, especially in Episode 12 with effects and, just not getting what I wanted and not being powerful enough. And I think generally Macs, not from my personal experience, from what I've heard and what I've seen in videos I've seen on the web, Macs are the way to go for video editing.
Cool. So you go Bimbo and go for a Mac. That's great.
Don't you have a Mac, Sessions?
Yeah, I do. It's just a MacBook, so. Busted.
You just went a little bit Bimbo, eh?
Yeah.
Totally.
So who's Ziply next?
Thank you, folks. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My question is, first of all, really great job you guys did. My question is, Linda Gallant, the Episode 11 geek fangirl, she's also the vocalist on I'm a Gamer, or at least that's what Google would indicate. Is that for real? And tell us a little more about Linda. And also, are those really her braces?
Linda is an amazing gal. She's a dancer, actress, a vocalist. She sings all styles, and I met her through Dave Dudurek, actually. She was singing in one of his bands. Dave Dudurek is the guitar player that does all the solos and whatnot for Pure Onage, like a solo on Feel Like Owning Noobs and a solo on Get Out of My Space. He mainly plays jazz. He's also a very talented jazz guitarist. But anyway, Linda, those are her braces, in fact. She happened to have braces, and she one day she we were sitting around, me, Jared, and Linda, and she sort of said, oh, yeah, it's all about video games, hey, this show. And she started doing this geek girl character that was talking about Zelda. And I'm like, oh, my God, we got to work that in the show somehow. She just had this character worked out with her geek voice, and it was just so perfect. So this was after we were recording with her. I never thought to actually put her in the show until she did that character. And then, so yeah, in Episode 11, she was the geek girl. And yes, she does sing she sings I'm a Gamer. She also sings I Want to Be Your Gamer Girl at the end of Episode 10. The full version of that song will be on the soundtrack. And she also sings at the very end of Episode 12 during the credits. She's singing some soulful, bluesy, funky type stuff there.
Yeah, she does some really brilliant work, both acting and singing, but I'd recommend she get a little bit of a web presence. Does she play out live in y'all's area?
Yeah, I think she's in a few bands. She's in a musical, Grease. I don't have the details on when that's being shown, but if any of you Torontonians want to see her, maybe I can post an email address. You can get in touch with her on the web, or maybe I'll make a post on the forums when I find out the details. But yeah, I'm going to go see her in Grease.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate
it. Awesome, man. Thanks for your awesome question.
All right, guys. Congrats on Ep 12. And this question's for the whole crew. What did you guys do before you became stars?
Okay, we can all answer that. You want to start, maybe Joel, and then we'll go to Jared, and then I'll answer that last.
Sure. We've been in the filming for a while, actually, and we did a few small projects before Pure Onage, mainly just goofing around and doing what we could. But we've been into filming for about 10 years, all of us, and all been good buddies since the beginning, and so yeah, that's been nice. But filming's definitely been all of our main goal.
Prior to
the show really taking off. I was bumming my way through university for about 6 years. Actually, Jeff and I both started in physics, and then eventually I went into pure math and some computer science, and then eventually I had some sort of epiphany or something, and I decided to start doing stand-up comedy, and it was sort of a life-changing experience when I started performing for people and making them laugh, and I kind of started to understand that that was something that I had to do and couldn't really ignore. So after 6 years, with much pride, especially for my parents, I decided to stop going to university, which is not something I would recommend. I still regret not finishing a degree. But I just started doing stand-up comedy for a few years, and Jeff and Joel and I, and Jeff Hodgson, we'd always kind of messed around with cameras and been into filming stuff. So I moved out to Toronto to pursue stand-up comedy, and just a few months after moving here, we started Pure Ownage, and the show started going so well, I had to stop doing stand-up and just work full-time on the show. But I am looking forward to doing some sets now that we're credited and I have that freedom.
I was, as Jarrett said, we started at the University of Calgary together, and I ended up doing a bachelor's there, and then I actually moved to Toronto to do grad school, and after I did a master's degree, I was, it's kind of funny, every time I finish a degree or finish school, you're sort of like, what are you going to do with your life? Oh, well, more school. You can't lose with more school, so I just stuck in school, because I didn't really know, nothing was really, passion for me, but except for playing in bands, playing music, performing musically, and making crazy videos with your buddies back in Calgary. That was really my hobby all along, and it was sort of a dream, like a rock star type career. Like, there's no way you're gonna make it. It's so hard to make it as a rock star kind of stuff. But it turns out with the internet, you can put some videos online and end up changing your career. So it was about episode 9, I think, was when I was just working too hard trying to do physics, do a PhD in physics, and working on Pure Ownage at the same time was just too much, so I ended up quitting. I never finished my degree, so I'm a dropout too, just because the Pure Ownage was doing so awesome, and it's really my dream career. It's like, it was always just a hobby, but now it's something I can do full-time, which is just great.
All I can say is you've done the right thing, and I hope you keep doing it, because you've got a great audience and you've got a great show. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, dude. Keep watching.
Thanks, man. That's awesome.
Hey, Spider5000 wants to know, what's your take on all the people saying the show is ruined after their identities were, shown? After your identities?
We obviously expected a certain backlash. But, the truth is there wasn't really a choice that could be made. A lot of people had already found out our names, and the word was getting out there. And, as our friends and family got really into it, and, as the show just continued to grow and grow and grow, the fact is, Jeff and I, we live downtown Toronto. I pass hundreds of people on the street every day. It was only a matter of time before all that information was completely public anyways. And I think that, we slowly introduced in the series, starting mostly in episode 4 with the first cut ever to cinematic, the first time we ever showed Jeremy without Kyle behind the camera. And, episode 9, where we're throwing blue microballs, we sort of, slowly introduced to the audience the notion that the world was a little more fictional than we had originally let on. But, regardless, there's always going to be a certain subset of people who will disagree with the direction of the show or the choice we've made. But in the end, I think, we're all very satisfied with the choice we made. I think that it's very positive for the show. It was inevitable, and there was really no option. So.
Yeah, there's also a bit of a backlash, people asking the question, is Jeremy really a gamer? Oh, my God, it's fake. It's Lonely Girl 15 all over again, right? And this sort of attitude is really, or this idea doesn't really apply to us, because how could you make a show like Pure Ownage if you didn't play video games, right? And our characters are sort of exaggerations of our actual selves. Kyle's the musician, film student kind of wannabe guy, and Jeremy's a hardcore gamer, and I can tell you that Jared probably plays as much games as Jeremy does. So all the people that think that wonder if FPS Doug and Jeremy are actual gamers, well, you should see Joel rip up ops.
I just want to say I'm not crazy though.
Oh man.
Oh, we believe you.
I just like to say that that he is crazy, and that every crazy man doesn't think he's crazy. Yeah, Joel, have you had any backlash being Joel Gardner instead of FPS Doug now? How has that been for you?
I get a lot of mixed reactions. You know, a lot of people think it's great that I finally put out the name or whatever, but a lot of people still MSN me about me being a traitor and. I know I've seen a couple posts where there's this one guy that still doesn't get it. I don't think and really thinks that I betrayed Jeremy or Jared, my friend, and it's kind of weird. But I've been feeling the backlash. A lot of people are very sad about FPS Doug's turn, but I think it's great, and I can't wait to see what comes.
Well, I was pretty surprised when I swung the camera back and you had the gun pointed at Jared's head. Like, come on, Joel.
Yeah, that took you off guard,
that wasn't
too.
In the script.
No, yeah. I know you didn't see that coming
script,
either, man.
Too funny. Yeah, I've actually, funny enough, I actually had a death threat a couple days ago. A guy wrote me, let me know that he's bought something from the noob store and he has that return address. Not that that's going to lead to me, but, I guess it's a starting point. And he let me know that he's in Ontario and that he has a gun. Et cetera, et cetera. So I guess this guy was
nice.
He felt that he had been following, as he described, the false idol for the last 2 years. So he was really upset, which is really too bad. Even on the forums, it kind of blows my mind the amount of posts I read that people are like, oh, Jeremy's not a gamer. That's so disappointing. And really, to anyone that knows me in real life, that's a hilarious statement because, when I was 10, I was Nintendo boy in my elementary school and all through junior high and high school. The amount of prejudice that I've dealt with is sort of, it was certainly a lot less cool when I was in school to be a gamer, and the fact that I've been playing games hardcore for, I'm talking 8-plus hours a day, average for probably 15 years, it's kind of funny for me to read posts where people know somehow that I'm not a gamer when the truth is, Ray, I'll kick all your asses, I'm pretty sure about that.
That's hilarious. I can't believe you got a death threat. That's so funny. I got one before myself, but it didn't have anything to do with the names or anything. It actually had something to do with my race, which was very shocking to me.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why don't you, let us know about your race experiences.
Yeah, Pierronage and myself personally have received very many emails about whether or not I'm a black person or African American, and it blows my mind. It's I am Caucasian, just to clear up any rumors out there, but we've all found it pretty funny.
Got a question here, sorry to interrupt, from some guy. He was wondering, completely random subject, but what was episode 12 budget compared to the others episodes?
Well, I think episode 12 wasn't all that expensive, or it wasn't too difficult to shoot. I guess the most difficult shoot was all the cinematic stuff in the castle. The cinematic stuff always takes a lot longer than the mockumentary stuff. And we had to fly out some actors. Joel came out from Calgary, and so did Jeff Hodgson, the guy that plays Deathstriker. And, of course, Bill Marchand, who is an amazing actor, came from Vancouver for that scene because we just had to get him in the show. He's a good buddy of ours. And, but really those are the costs. We have sort of our gear, our lighting and whatever else, our cameras and we just roll tape, which is really cheap. Mini DV tape doesn't cost much. So, really it's about travel expenses and such. So in that respect, episode 11 was by far the most expensive episode because we went to the Netherlands and had to stay in hotels and had to eat at restaurants and stuff like that. So that was pretty expensive to get that Dutch footage. But I think still the most difficult scene technically and in terms of time was the episode 9 micro battle scene, which we had Davin Langell help out. He directed that scene, the micro battle. So yeah, I guess that was it. Yeah, still up at 11's our most expensive episode. Cool beans.
Okay, Dara, I got a question. You mentioned you had you had plans for 3 seasons of Pyronage. Since you decided to go full time with the deal, can we expect the next 2 seasons to come in like a more timely manner than the first? And that being said, what, if any, are the post Pyronage plans for you guys?
Well, we try to get the episodes out as fast as we can, but there's a tough balance between, you know, working on things like the Noob Store and working on the show, which we're trying to, Jarrett and I are trying to get as much time towards working on the show to get that out as fast as possible. But as you may have noticed, our episodes get more and more complex and sometimes longer and longer, so we keep feeling that we have to top the last episode. So, yeah, it'd be nice if we were doing episode 3s all the time. We'd get them out once every 3 weeks now. But you know, we're still probably going to stick to a 2-month, 2-3-month kind of deal with season 2. But yeah, we'll see if we can get that time to be shorter, because ideally I'd like to get them out as fast as possible too.
Well, that being said, are there any future plans for you guys after the 3rd season?
As for Pyronage, after the 3rd season, or maybe even before then, obviously we want to do at least 1 feature film with Pyronage, which would be great. And I know that, you know, all of us at the show, pretty much everyone involved is interested in a career in film and or television. So I know for sure Jeff and I have some ideas brewing. Joel's got some great ideas brewing. And I think that after Pyronage, we'll just kind of produce maybe more series or maybe some films and just try to get all these ideas that we really think are great in our heads out onto paper and then film.
Rock and roll, guys. Good luck with that. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, man. Keep on talking.
Hi. I got a question for a lot of you guys. What gave you the idea to make the show?
Well, it sort of happened by accident. And Jarrett was improvising a character in front of the camera one day when I was trying to get some test footage. I think this is a story that we tell every TeamSpeak. but yeah, it was sort of, we played a lot of Zero Hour, and we started shooting a guy talking about Zero Hour, and people wanted, like, oh my God, I got to see more of this show, I got to see more of this guy. So made episode 1, made episode 2, and the audience grew, and there you go, we have Pyronage.
Okay, thanks. Is Jarrett going to make a game like he said in one of the episodes, or is that not going to happen, though?
It has been a dream of mine since I've been a little kid to make at least 1 game. At the moment, I have three games that I think are unique and stellar games that would be very competitive that I have in my brain, and I really hope that Pyronage gives me the opportunity to find myself in a game designer position one day to have some creative control over games, because, yeah, like I said, you know, since I was a kid, that's probably been the biggest dream of mine, is just to make my own game.
I think if anybody can make a decent game, I think it should be you. I think most of the problems, the big companies concentrate on the graphics too much, and then we lose out on the gameplay.
Agreed, 100%.
Yeah, my game probably wouldn't even have a single player mode, and there would be no cinematic cutscenes, and there would be no wasted time on any of that. It would be, you know, the most fluid and intuitive controls possible with a fair and competitive environment.
Okay, thanks, mate, and good luck with everything, and I hope you do well with the show, and I hope you get your game released.
Awesome, thank you.
Hi. I'd like to ask where the Ruffle Amal Productions logo image that's been at like the start of every episode since episode one, where that actually came from, whether you took it yourselves, where, and if there's any meaning behind it.
Ah, wow. Somebody finally asks this question. Everyone's been staring at this logo for 2 years, and nobody asks where it comes from. Well, I'll tell you guys. It's a picture that I took when I was on a trip with some physics buddies of mine. And that's actually Warren and Kent, two friends of mine that are lying on the beach. And it was taken on the coast of Oregon. We drove down from Calgary and went on a beach trip, camping trip. And, you know, we were messing around with making a logo. You know, we're not designers like back in the day. You know, we're just messing around in Photoshop trying to get something that looks good for logos for our stuff. And in fact, the original Pure Onyx logo was really garbage. It was something that I had made in Photoshop. And one of our friends said, dude, that's garbage. I'm like, I know. And so it was Kevin Willock, our buddy, that actually designed the Pure Onyx logo, which I think is awesome. It just kicked ass. And I'm so glad that, you know, when we weren't taking it seriously, somebody was thinking seriously about our logo, you know, because I didn't expect it to be this big and we would have been married to this crappy logo that I designed. But anyway, this picture with Warren and Kent, I think, is pretty good. It's kind of like guys relaxing on the beach. It was kind of a gorgeous picture, and the weather's nice, whatever. And anyway, yeah, it was just sort of the aesthetics of the photo, and it was a good memory for me. It was a great trip.
All right.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Oh, yeah. You go on with your question.
I was just going to ask, are you going to be using that in the future for any other production stuff, or do you reckon it would be solely for Pure Onyx?
No, Rafa Mayo Productions will very likely produce more stuff sort of under that, the umbrella and that logo included. And I just wanted to add that the logo is sort of special to me and Jeff and everyone. It has this this feeling to it, what we call sort of a blue ocean thinking, which, you know, ironically is actually the same philosophy that Nintendo adopted about a year later with the Wii and whatnot they always talked about, which we thought was pretty funny. But just sort of the idea that the internet is this massive ocean out there that no one's charting yet, and we could just sit back and look at it and just see, you know, just what was out there and how we can get there on our own. And so, you know, the logo is really special to us and we really like it, so I think we'll keep it.
Yeah. I'd like to ask, like, the name Pure Onyx, did you give any thought to that, and were there any other, you know, ideas for names before you settled for Pure Onyx?
I think Pure Onyx was the first idea that we had to name the show, but it was, in fact, we had decided we wanted to make a show, but we didn't know what form the show would take, but we knew it would be called Pure Onyx. And in fact, in the early stages of development, Pure Onyx was going to be a replays show that would cover Command & Conquer Generals replays. So, you know, it was supposed to be me and Jarrett sitting at a desk and the camera and some backdrop or whatever that I was going to set up in my dorm room, and we were going to talk about the latest news and generals and, you know, sort of do the standard gamer thing. But it wasn't until, you know, we started thinking in the fictional route and doing a show about the game that was, you know, more like a guy that took it real seriously and whatever instead of like a news show. So, yeah, it was originally supposed to be, Pure Onyx was supposed to be like this news replay show where we would do shoutcasts on replays. We ended up doing a shoutcast, actually, on one of the replays. You can find that buried somewhere in our forums or in the CNC Replays forums, which is now gamereplays.org. You know, it's Jeremy and Kyle doing a 20-minute-long shoutcast on a classic match. I can't remember who it was. Was it Fox 333?
And Fox and Set.
Yeah, Fox versus Set. So, yeah, those guys were really good back in the day.
Yeah.
I've got a question here from Shatoon. He asks, how did the names Jeremy, Kyle, and Doug, and Anastasia come around? Is there any, like, anything behind the names, or were they just kind of out of the hat?
I think Jeremy? Doug was just, like, a random kind of thing. I think we just needed a name on the spot, and that just kind of came out of nowhere, but...
Yeah, the all the names, I guess, came out in different ways. like the Doug name, the only requisite we had for that name was that it was monosyllabic, you know, that that it could be said in sort of a scream, one syllable bang. And so it could have been a lot of things, but I think in the end I'm really satisfied with Doug. Jeremy was the first name that came about, and it actually came about as a result of sitting down with Jeff in a restaurant on Bloor Street, and the Pearl Jam song Jeremy came on, and we just happened to be talking about what we should name the characters, and I used to be a big Pearl Jam fan quite a few years ago, so it just seemed so appropriate when it came on. It was like an omen. So we named him Jeremy, and then Kyle was just sort of a name. We were cycling through names that sounded good with Jeremy, because we knew that Jeremy and Kyle would be said a lot, Jeremy and Kyle. And, yeah, you know, we went with Lyle, at very first. We had a bunch of names for Kyle, but, yeah, eventually I just thought Jeremy and Kyle and had a great aesthetic, you know, and rolled off your tongue really well.
Fair enough, thanks.
Hey, guys, before we move on, can we voice somebody here? His name is Ni Feng. He is N-I-E space F-E-N-G. He's a Wenyan from,
I don't know
where he's living now. I got to ask him.
Done.
Hey, Wenyan.
Hey,
Wenyan,
how's it going?
Apparently not. Oh, maybe he doesn't have a mic. Anyway, I haven't talked to Wenyan.
He's still in Toronto.
He's in Toronto. Wow, I haven't seen the guy for ages. I thought he was in Japan. Okay, he's got no mic. All right, well, I guess he won't be able to talk to Wenyan. But anyway, Wenyan is one of the bad guys from China 1999.
Good to know.
Or 98, I can't remember. Was it in 1998, I think. Yeah, that was what it was.
Question?
All right, let's proceed with the question.
Who do you think would win in a vampire battle royale? Nosferatu, Count Dracula, or Khashmuzi?
Joel, you want to take that question?
I don't know how to take it. What was the choices again?
Nosferatu, Count Dracula, and Khashmuzi.
Well, Khashmuzi look crazy, but I think I'll have to go with Nosferatu, the original.
I don't know, man. I have to go with Khashmuzi. I mean,
It'd be close, man. It'd be close down to the wire.
I guess.
All right.
Next person.
Thank you, Apostolos.
Way to go.
Yes, I have a question. Besides video games, what else was a big inspiration throughout the show? I mean, are you a Kevin Smith fan at all? Or any comedians, like you said, you were into?
Up until Jersey Girl, maybe.
So, do you...
Yeah, there's a reason to watch Jersey Girl, and that is to watch Ben Affleck attempts to cry on camera, which is like, you know, it's really neat to see that, you know, you can be an actor that does, you know, a certain subset of acting so well, but, you know, you can't do the crying thing. It's really amazing.
He's a top graduate of the Keanu Reeves School of Acting.
Hilarious. Yeah, I don't know. We play a lot of video games, and we listen to a lot of music by Radiohead, I guess, and I don't know what other stuff that's influenced the show, I guess, you know, obviously the films that we reference, we're all big film buffs, and I guess the soundtrack is, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but the soundtrack is heavily influenced by Yoko Kanno. She did the soundtrack for Cowboy Bebop series, which is, yeah, it's amazing. She's, what an amazing musician. and just like the variance in the style is sort of how I wanted the Pirona soundtrack to be. You know, I was just, I went through all the Cowboy Bebops and I was just like, wow, the music's just incredible, and especially even the movie, right? And so that sort of heavily influenced the music, because I wanted sort of to visit many, many different styles, funky stuff, techno stuff, 80s stuff, you know. You may notice that the end credits of episode 12 is kind of like, at the end it gets all funky, soul girl voice kind of stuff, which is very similar to the end credits song, Knock a Little Harder, on the Cowboy Bebop the movie soundtrack, which is an amazing tune. What an amazing tune that is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it just really, that song just really was like, wow, that's an end credit song. That's a sort of feel good, you go home with a smile on your face kind of tune. I wanted to have that attitude, that, or to give people that feeling at the end of Pirona's episode 12. So I hope it was successful.
Oh, cool. So you're into like the jazz, like with Song Tank and stuff?
Yeah. What an amazing band that is. The Seatbelts, they're called, or whatever. Yoko Kanno and the Seatbelts. They're just incredibly talented musicians. And yeah, her influence was sort of bebop music, which is, you know, sort of in, you know, it's right there in the title. Sort of a crazy mix mash, a crazy mix up of a whole bunch of improvised whatever on the soundtrack. But yeah, anyway, that's what the music's all about.
All right, thanks, fan of the show. And nice to see someone else's too.
Bungie Toad wants to know, what do you think about RTS games on next gen consoles, mainly Battle for Middle Earth 2 on 360?
I haven't actually had an opportunity to play BMFE2 on the 360 yet. EA told me they were going to give me a copy, but it never came in the mail, so. Too bad. But, as for BMFE2, I'm not actually a fan of the franchise. I have issues with large squads. There's some serious responsiveness issues with your units in BMFE2, and that's such a critical thing in an RTS game, to issue an order and actually have it carried out that moment that you issue it and whatnot. So I was encountering some roadblocks when I tried to get into that series. The first one, of course, you know, I could talk for 20 minutes why I didn't like it. But as for consoles and RTS in general, in the past, controls haven't really translated all that well to consoles. If there's one type of game or a couple types of games that PCs play better than consoles, it's sort of RTS and FPS, just because of the sheer number of keys used and whatnot. But I do actually have a lot of hope. Halo 2 has gotten really popular, and it's not a total piece of shit. And I think that there's a lot of hope for consoles and RTS in the future. And I know that Command & Conquer 3 will also be on the Xbox 360, and I will play it on the Xbox 360 just to see what it's like. And, you know, I don't think it's impossible that they figure out, you know, how to control an RTS properly on a console. But for now, I'm playing on a PC, and I it seems like I will continue to do that.
Yeah, I actually saw a demo of it, and it does look interesting. But overall, it just wouldn't compare to PC control.
I don't know, I guess I'm up then. Hey, Jeff and Jay. I hung out with you guys after the premiere and with Jarrett on Sunday. I just kind of wanted to let Jarrett know that I was the big guy with the Umbrella Corporation jacket on Sunday, and that I don't speak with a frog voice year-round, that was after the Extreme Kazooing on the premiere. And I also kind of was hoping that Joe and Jarrett would tell everyone about their online experiences. Like the one you were telling me, Jared, as we were walking back to the hostel.
Well, I've had a lot of online experiences, and to be honest, I couldn't particularly remember that one. I thought maybe it's interesting to tell you my first online experience. I believe I was 12 when my family could finally afford a PC. I was a bit behind Jeff and the others in the PC area. So I got a 386-33 at the age of, I think it was around, I was about 11 or 12, and I got a 2400 baud modem. So that was my my first sort of online experience. And this was before the internet. This was back in the BBS days. So, you know, I sort of put the Super Nintendo away and sort of made a little BBS of my own and really got into all these text-based games in the BBS era, because it was the first time that you could sort of play multiplayer games with people who weren't in your house. And so, that, you know, that was an amazing experience for me, just sort of at the dawn of multiplayer gaming, and something that I'll fondly remember for the rest of my life.
It's pretty cool. And Joel Jarrett once told me that you were accused of hacking by somebody portraying your character.
yeah, that's true. I still remember the first time I came into a server and saw FPS Doug, and just how surreal it kind of was, you know. And I had to laugh, but I I've been like the stories in Pure Owners, they're not far off, you know. I have been kicked for hacking before, supposed hacking before, and you know, you just got to sit back and laugh and kind of take it in stride. And, like, you got to take it as a compliment, especially if you're not hacking, you know. But I find it funny. And, yeah, there's so many FPS thugs out there. I've ran into so many ever since that first time. And a lot of the times they get booted for just constant spamming of the classic quotes. And I can't help but just sit back and laugh.
And now I recall this story that you were talking about when we were walking, and it was when Joel and I were jumping on ops. We were playing Pipeline at my pad one day, and we encountered an FPS Doug, which Joel proceeded to headshot the next round, and then FPS Doug was accusing Joel of hacking.
yeah, that was classic.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. I think Eska wanted to talk to you guys. He was telling me over Xfire. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, Eska, is he in here?
You want me to give him a voice?
Yeah, give Eska a voice.
Hey, what's up, guys? I was just laughing my ass off at that story. And
hey, dude, what's going on?
Not much, man. I was just staying quiet. I didn't know if you guys knew I was in here. But now I have a question since Jarrett was talking about the first time he got his 386. I have fond memories of that computer myself. And he was talking about playing BB games and stuff, and I was just interested in to know, because it's something I actually don't know about him. What was it that you used to play?
The first one that I got super addicted to was called Solar Realms Elite. And it was made by Amit Patel, and his brother later made Baron Realms Elite, which was one of the first, if not the first, inter-BBS games. So it was sort of a team-based version of Solar Realms Elite. And that was the first time I got really addicted to a multiplayer game. I just thought about it all day, every day. It couldn't get in my brain. Every time I got home, I had to check to see what had happened. And, you know, I was staying up till 12:01 a.m. every day to play my turns first and whatever. And just great memories of, Baron Realms Elite, honestly. For anyone out there that had those experiences, I'm sure they're fond for everyone. It was really such a great game. And at the time, you know, it really convinced me what you could do without any graphics at all. And, you know, I believe really that game is still better than most games that come out today on the store shelves with all their shader 3.0 effects and whatever.
No, I totally agree. I was a big fan of those games back in the day. And like you said, you put your Super Nintendo away. I did the same thing. And that's where my PC gaming went off the hook. So, I mean, that's all I really have. Joel, it's nice hearing from you. I know we always chat and this and that, but different experience here on TeamSpeak.
Yeah, man, good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I know. I probably sound nasally over TeamSpeak, but oh well.
Yep. Yeah,
take care, man.
I'm sorry.
No, I okay. Yeah, that's it. So take care. Take it easy. Great show, like always, you know. Just see me at the next premiere and all the other ones.
Take it easy, man.
Rod wants to know what you think about the community patch for Zero Hour, you know, 1.05.
Ah, that's funny. I just actually, you know, it's funny. I hadn't played Zero Hour in so long, and then I was checking out Game Replays about a month ago, and I saw that community patch, so I downloaded it, and I played a bit with it in Skirmish just to sort of get a feel for the unit balance and whatnot. And, you know, I went online to play, but there was no one online playing it, and then I had to sit down, and I really thought about whether or not this is something I want to do. You know, do I want to invest time in a game that I know is unsupported and that there's no one behind it that still loves it and cares for it, and I decided against it. So it's sitting. I have it installed, and I occasionally, you know, when I'm either really bored or maybe I've had a few drinks and I come home late at night, it's funny how I still go back to Zero Hour and boot it up sometimes, because no other game has ever felt as good as that game feels to play. And so yeah, but no, I don't play in Clan Wars anymore, and I have very little experience with the new patch.
Yeah, I personally don't use it at all. After they implemented it, a lot of people stopped playing Clan Wars.
Yeah,
I think
Eli's way. It's tough to implement a mod and have the whole community, you know, sort of download and install that mod. And really, I really appreciate the effort that the guys at Game Replay put into that and having that get made and tested. But really, it's pathetic that ELA does not patch that game themselves. It's really sad that the latest game in the super successful franchise, Command & Conquer, has not received any attention for how many years now. And yeah, really, I can't even talk about it. It starts to get me mad because it's such a great game that had so much potential, and it could have been played competitively. It could have been another Warcraft 3. It really could have. All it needed was a little bit of love and a little bit of attention and a tiny bit of money that I know they can afford. And yeah, so talking about Zero Hour just gets me really mad, so let's move on.
Well, it seems like Blizzard and some other companies are the only companies to actually try to patch their games more than 1 year after the game are released.
Blizzard
has like
amazing
most
support.
Other companies just patch them until their next game has come out or, yeah, when they have time for it, and then they just forget about that game entirely.
Yeah, I think the problem is the way that revenue is generated from the production of games, particularly, you know, RTS and FPS games that have private servers. You know, World of Warcraft is great. Sure, you know, you pay $15 a month because Blizzard has to host all these servers. It's easy to justify, and of course Blizzard's going to patch it because their income is not solely the box sales on the shelf. Their income is people continuing to play. You know, if there was a way to sort of put a revenue model in place for RTS games where the companies actually had to, you know, it was in their best interest financially to support the game, then we would actually, you know, that's the only thing that's going to make EA support their games, because You've got smaller studios like Blizzard that they still have this passion for their games, and I think that maybe they understand better than a lot of companies the brand power, you know, the effect that the brand power has on sales and whatnot. And I guess it's a tough call. I'm not a business guy. I don't really know the money behind it. All I know is that it seems reasonable to me that, you know, showing support for your games and keeping them, you know, balanced and whatnot will provide future sales. But those kind of future sales are so hard to track that I don't think they bother, and they just worry about getting the next title out and getting that initial rush of sales and then abandoning them.
Well, EA's reputation is kind of ruined forever anyway, so I don't think they'd start doing that now.
Well, I can tell you that if they surprise us all and at Zero Hour and all of a sudden showed some love for the series that they spent a lot of money buying, that I might actually buy Command & Conquer 3.
Well, you know, there's...
You're not planning on buying?
I just want to interject here and say that, you know, we're saying a lot of bad things about EA, but, you know, maybe I'm just optimistic, but, you know, I have a lot of faith in the new Command & Conquer, because we talked to the guys, we talked to the top guys on the project at E3, we met with them, and they knew Pure Onage, and they knew that we were all about Zero Hour in the beginning, and they instilled some confidence in us that they were taking multiplayer very seriously, And, you know, Jim Vasella is in the E3 special. He's a great guy, and he's all about gaming, and he's very young, talented, new guy at EA. I'm hoping that they'll take the Command & Conquer franchise back into where it should be, you know, the awesomest game on the planet.
Yeah, I just want to point out, too, that, you know, I talk harshly of EA, and when I do that, I'm talking typically in generalities and more about the publishing company itself that allocates funds to studios like EA LA to support their titles. We did have a chance to meet a lot of the CNC3 guys at E3, and they really were smart, young, you know, just great guys, and they were funny, they were fans of the show, and they really completely changed my view of their studio, because it wasn't too high before E3. But, you know, they are great guys, and you know, I promised myself that I wouldn't buy any more EA games until they fix Urara, and they haven't. So I can't go back on my promise because I'm just so stubborn that way. But I have a feeling that a friend or maybe EA will provide me with a copy, and you can bet I'll definitely give it a try. And I really, really do hope that it's a great game, because I am a huge Command & Conquer fan. I love the franchise. So does Jeff. You know, so does Mark. And we're all just such big fans that if the game sucks, it really will break my heart. And if it goes unsupported, oh God, I'm gonna buy a plane ticket down there and kick some ass.
Hey, just a quick question. We haven't really talked much about the premieres. Jared, what was it like getting mobbed by all those fans in Toronto?
It was pretty surreal. Episode 9, I guess, sort of broke all our brains, because, you know, we were expecting 50 or 100 people to show up and for them to be the average movie-going audience, you know, kind of quiet and whatnot. And when we first walked down the street and saw almost 500 people in this massive lineup that went around the corner and spanned a huge city block, and they're all screaming and going nuts, and it almost pulled me out of reality, and it was something that I still think about, and just sort of how it's shaken the foundations of just being alive, and how there's no going back, and all the permanent changes I've sort of made to my life as a result. And the last premiere was the biggest by far. I think there was over 700 people there, and it just it was actually almost a bit scary. After the show, you know, we didn't have any handlers, we didn't have security, and I was actually getting pushed around. There was so many people crowding me for autographs. You know, I was getting kind of pushed around, and the street was blocked off. Cars couldn't get by. People started to get mad. People on the street were getting mad. People didn't know what was going on because we get no media attention. So, you know, people on the street have no idea what's going on. All they know is that there's 700 people freaking out, surrounding some guy that they can't see and blocking all the traffic and causing this commotion. So, you know, I was trying to move, and everyone would follow, and it was a bit scary. But at the same time, I mean, it's obviously very positive, and, you know, it gives me a pretty big high to experience something like that and to get to talk to so many people and have them tell me that I've influenced them, which is amazing, because as someone who's played games my whole life, and just, you know, my number one passion to sort of share that with people and to promote that, you know, it's just been so incredible.
What about Vancouver and Calgary? Calgary must have been really nice because you had all your family and friends there, didn't you?
Yeah, Calgary was pretty cool. It was the smallest of the three shows because the theater only held 350 people, so that sort of capped our theater population. And, you know, we had our moms and dads were running the noob store, or taking tickets and helping out, and it was all really cool. And it was cool to come out in, you know, in front of our hometown and in front of our family and whatnot. And Vancouver was on a weeknight, and they still had, you know, I think it was over 400 people came out for that, and it was a pretty crazy time too. But, you know, having come back to Toronto, and just seeing, you know, the 700-plus people who go just somehow a little crazier. No one seems to rip their shirts off in Calgary, Vancouver, and run up and down the aisles the way they love to do in Toronto. So, but all around, all three shows were just amazing, and it was just so great to meet all those fans face-to-face and get to talk to them about games and whatnot.
Yeah, speaking of moms and dads, at the Calgary premiere, I just wanted to say that I was surprised to find out that a lifelong friend of mine, his dad is a big Pure Orange fan, and you know, I'd met him many times before, obviously being over at my friend's house for dinner, and it's funny, like, people you grow up with, suddenly, you know, their parents are fans, and they're excited to shake your hand, and they want your autograph and stuff like that. But yeah, Joel, you might know who I'm talking about here.
Am I sitting with him?
You might have to put him on the microphone for a second. I'd just like to ask Derek Sweet how his dad became a fan of Pieronage.
Are you holding on, Shea?
Yeah.
Okay. How my dad became a fan of Pieronage, I showed him Pieronage, of course, and he was familiar with all my friends, of course, because I grew up with Jared and Jeff and known Joel for a while, and then he was just really, he fell in love with FPS Doug, and like a lot of people, and said it reminded him of Joe Pesci in Casino, which is a trippy comparison, but yeah, I mean, that's I showed him the show, and then he was a fan. That's, I mean, it's pretty natural. Yeah, he was downloading all the, well, actually, getting them through iTunes was a big part of it, because he was just playing around with iTunes at the time.
Yeah, that was funny. I remember you telling me when Joel came over to your house, he was like excited to meet Joel, even though he'd met Joel many times after becoming a fan of FPS.
Yeah, that's true. And he had known Joel for years, but then when Joel came over, all of a sudden it was like my dad was like a, like an excited fan. It was funny.
Yeah, that's Derek Sweet. He's just sitting with Joel right now there at Derek's place doing some TeamSpeak action. All right, we can move on. Another question?
You mind if I tell a story about...
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
What you were saying earlier about the old Command & Conquer franchise just brought up a memory of me and my friend maybe 6 years ago. I went to a LAN center, and I played one of the first betas of Counter-Strike. So then... Sorry, that's my friend. And then I met my new friend at school. I just changed schools that year, and... realized he was a gamer, so we went to his house, and I asked him, like, if he liked to play any video games. He said, yeah, I got the Command & Conquer. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. Do you have Counter-Strike? And he's like, yeah, man, I got Counter-Strike. I'm like, all right, let's play that. So he whips out a Command & Conquer game, an expansion to it called Counter-Strike, and I'm like, what is this? And he starts playing that, and I got all confused, and then I really started getting into gaming. Sorry about that. Anyway, my question was for your, for Jeff. When did the franchise, you said you had worked on a lot of projects before, and when did Pieronage really become a serious project, if it wasn't at the beginning?
Well, I guess, you know, we worked on a lot of projects part-time, just messing around, working remotely. I was actually in Toronto, while everybody else was in Calgary. Joel, Jarrett, Jeff Hodgson, and Derek were all in Calgary, and we used to work together. But, yeah, it was, I think Pieronage got really serious when we actually started investing our own money into the company to sell t-shirts. You know, it was very risky for us. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, and here we are putting our life savings into 150 t-shirts that we weren't sure if they're going to sell. So, yeah, that was sort of, you know, when I started thinking about it as a, you know, more seriously as a business, like, you know, hey, it'd be great if we can make some money, buy some better gear with this, which we did in the end, and you see the results from the quality of the episodes. But yeah, I guess around episode 4 was when it really, when the IO Noobs shirt hit the Noob Store and the Noob Store was born. You know, IO Noobs and logo were the original. Oh yeah, and signed bandanas, they were also available, so that was it.
Okay, oh, forgot my mic. Got a couple of questions to catch up on. One's from Delta Echo. It says, how does a fan attraction affect you? And is there any time when you wish you could change it?
Joel, you want to answer that?
Yeah, fan reaction. Fan reaction is very, very trippy at times. You know, we're not rich men by any means, and I would have to take up jobs here and there. And just recently, as last week, I was out working, and a guy come up to me, and he just said, "Tell me I'm not crazy." And I just looked at him, and I'm like, "What? I don't know how to answer that question. I'm sorry." And he said, "You're FPS Doug, right? You're FPS Doug." And I'm just like, "Oh, yeah, that's me. And you know, he was shocked. He couldn't believe. He's like, what? He just didn't understand what I was doing and outworking, you know, a regular job. So that was very, very trippy, and he was definitely shocked. And yeah, it was a weird experience. Definitely that uncomfortable silence afterwards.
My favorite story, Joel. You got to tell the story about the Sate story with the "What are you doing, guy?"
Oh yeah, one time I was painting the res hallways at Sate, and a guy came out of his dorm, and he was locking his door, and he kind of stopped and looked at me, and I could just feel this guy staring at me, and I kind of looked over at him, and he's just like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just painting the hallways during the summer and whatnot." He's like, "No, like, what are you doing?" And I just started laughing, and I'm just like, "Well, I'm just painting the hallways." And he's like, "But you're FPS dog. Like, what are you doing here?" So yeah, he couldn't believe it either.
Yeah, SAIT is the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. It's like a school in Calgary, and it's hilarious. Like around schools, there's just so many Pironage fans, and you can get recognized so easily. I think Jared has a few stories. Maybe he'll share with us. I don't know.
Yeah, I've got a lot of stories. Most of them aren't too exciting. I prefer to have stories about meeting two Swedish blonde twins who loved the show and had a threesome with me.
When did that happen?
I don't have any of those, unfortunately. But, you know, I still meet people. It's out of the clear blue. It's funny because you can kind of notice the recognition before they say anything, because you sort of look over and you'll make eye contact with a guy who's kind of shaking and looks like he just shat in his pants or something. And then they'll walk over and they'll, you know, shake my hand and talk to me. And it's really cool because, you know, I'm just a guy and I'm a gamer. And, you know, so we always have something in common. It's usually games. So 99% of the time we'll just start talking about what we're playing at the time or whatever. And I'll ride the subway with them. And, you know, it's just the average cool experience. I think the craziest experiences are when I'm with Joel and people do things like run across the street, almost getting hit in the head by a car just to scream boom headshot at us or something.
Yeah, that was one of the more creepier experiences.
Yeah, for the most part, they're really positive. Most people really understand that, you know, they're very conscious of imposing on your privacy. So, you know, they want to get an autograph and a handshake, talk to you for a second, realize you're a person, and then they usually leave. But, you know, 1 in 100, you'll get these weird guys that ask to walk with you, and then they ask for your number, and they're like, "Yeah, let's hang out sometime and stuff." And you're like, "Dude, I've known you for like 4 seconds. And, you know, that's kind of creepy and whatnot." But that's pretty rare. And for the most part, it's just this kind of cool experience that happens, you know, every couple times I go out.
Yeah, it's definitely occurs way more in Toronto than here in Calgary. And that's just because of the culture here. It's more of a driving culture in Calgary. So definitely don't experience too much recognition out here. But, yeah, Toronto's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And this one time there was these two Swedish twins. It was pretty cool.
Were they both men, yeah? Sorry, couldn't help it. All right, I've got one more question. From, where's it gone? It says, in episode 12, the bloody team thing. When you guys met with the TV company, when Carl and Jeremy met a TV company, is that based on a real situation, or is it just to answer the fan kind of question of whether PP will move to TV?
It was a fictitious situation that we sort of came up with that was very, very, very loosely based on our experiences. So we've talked to television companies, and they've been great, and, you know, they're... but, you know, they don't know how to work with us, and because it's so new, you know, this whole internet broadcasting thing. And so TV companies that we've talked to are trying to get their internet broadcasting going, and it takes time when you're a big company. You want to do it properly and things like that. You can't just put some AVI files up on a website, right, like we do. But we thought it was a, you know, sort of, it would be a comedic situation to have, you know, sort of the self-referential thing with our show and, you know, why it's not on TV. And I think many of the, you know, there's sort of undertones in that conversation that are basically the reason why we're not on television. It's such a new thing. We deal with online culture, you know, we're better off on the internet anyway, I think. There's a lot of idiosyncrasies with the Canadian television industry as well, that make sure that projects like ours don't get to be on TV and don't get the funding that usually funds television. I made a post about that in the past news if you want to read about the infancy of internet television.
Thanks.
I have a question. Where the hell's Dave? What's he up to?
Dave, you know,
I miss Dave too.
Yeah, we all miss him. He's an awesome guy, and you know, it's a shame that you know, we don't get to have him in the show more often. But you know, I call him once every couple months or whatever, and I'm like, Dave, will you come back? You come back to the show? He's like, oh man, he's got shit to do, and you know, RL calls, so. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll call him in a couple months or whatever. Who knows?
Actually, Dave was back with his parents, and they came to Toronto for the weekend a few weeks ago. So we got to actually hang out again, and it was pretty cool. And Dave somehow, in between the last time I saw him, got even better at Tetris. And so some of the Tetris battles were actually inspired by Dave, who beat me at Tetris, which is unacceptable because generally, I don't ever lose at video games, so now I'm in the process of training up my Tetris with some multi-T spins, so the next time we meet, I'm going to fucking feed him his ass.
I can't wait to see that battle.
Okay, you better let the guys queuing up speak. Yeah, Pulse, go for it.
Alright, yous! Alright, it's Clark from Forums. You're right there, Mads.
Yeah, totally.
I'll do, amazing, mate. Amazing. So, you know, you got that DVD coming out. You got DVD, when's it coming out?
Is that Devo?
Is that Chase? It's Clark from Forums. When's the DVD coming out? I want to buy it, mate.
Do you have any gas, mate? Fucking ballon, what?
Devo! Smoke it, dear.
Are you chav, mate? You got some chav.
Alright, Root, alright.
Oh my god, right, even Jericho is going to chav.
This is my, alright, this is my real voice.
Give
me a moment. Alright, so when's the DVD coming out then, lads?
Okay, is TeamSpeak clear now? Can we talk?
No, I mean, yes.
Yeah, we're going to get the DVD out as soon as possible. There's just a lot of behind the scenes, a lot of interviews, a lot of bloopers we want to get through. So we want to make the DVDs pretty much, you know, the complete representation of Pure Owners Season 1, and that's going to take a lot of time. But I really hope to get them up before Christmas because everyone wants them for Christmas presents. But, you know, we don't know yet. We're getting them as soon as possible. We're aiming for, you know, to start making them in a month, which means another month after that. So, you know, 2 months, maybe they'll be on the Noob Store. But they'll be on the Noob Store for sure.
Ah, amazing, mate. So, do you do your own stunts like to Ruffle Cow?
And also the soundtrack's going to be released with the DVD.
Excuse me, do you do your own stunts like to Ruffle Cow?
Yeah, all right, so let's move on. Next question, please.
Do you do your own stunts?
Okay, bye.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, man.
Okay, my main question is, how do you guys feel about the success of the show and the response from the internet community and such?
We love it.
All right, I just wanted to find out, what do you guys think about the Diablo franchise?
Well, first I'll just give our opinion on the response. It's just absolutely amazing that we have shown that you can bypass traditional distributors and speak directly to your audience, as Jared has said. You know, it's incredible that we have the viewership we have on the internet. And I meet people in the industry, you know, for example, that are relatively established. You know, I met the guy that is a music video director. He directs all of Billy Talent's videos, Sum 41 videos, you know, big bands, and his videos are amazing. I'm like, dude, I love your stuff. Like, you shoot on film. It's incredible footage you get and just like amazing music videos. You're so talented. I'm just amazed at this guy because, I want to be a director, right? And it's just, he knows so much that I don't know. And he looks at me, he's like, dude, you beat the system. Like, wow, you're on the internet with a huge audience and you got a noob store and stuff. You know, wow, that's amazing to him. I'm like, dude, that stuff's like, you know, it's a lot easier than what you do. Like, he's a really talented music video director. But anyway, it's just really amazing. I think that it was very natural for us since obviously we spend a lot of time on the internet and a lot of time playing games. And we had success in this project. I'm going to see if Jared wants to talk about that or if he wants to talk about Diablo here in a second. Hang on one second.
Yeah, Diablo is it's pretty cool. I played the original way back in the day. Never got too into the original. When Diablo 2 came out, I admit that I got a little bit addicted for a couple months. And then there's only so many times you can run the same level over and over before it gets a little boring. And I had the expansion and whatnot. So, I played them all, and I played Diablo 2 and the expansion more than I probably should have. I think it's a good franchise. The only thing that will break my heart is if they make Diablo 3 before StarCraft 2.
Well, thanks for your time, guys, and I'd like to say thanks for all the great stuff from the Noob Store. I personally own the T-shirt of Pure Ownage, and I hope to see maybe Pure Ownage on the TV one day.
Awesome. Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Take care.
I have a feeling they'll make, like, World of Warcraft 5 before they release StarCraft 2.
Yeah.
For any other non-MMO game, for that matter.
Yeah, again, I think, you know, money's going to talk. I have to admit that I'm not much of a businessman, but if I owned Blizzard and had 7.5 million people paying me $15 a month to play an MMO, it'd be pretty hard to get people off that project to work on a new RTS or whatever.
Sean would like to know, did you actually throw Jeremy's DS Lite in episode 12, or what did you replace it with?
No, actually, that was a white case that was almost approximately like the exact same size as a DS that I got with mine that I purchased down in the States when I was traveling. And just luckily it was almost the exact size as a DS, and it was white, so it worked out perfectly. But yeah, we definitely don't want to be throwing any DSs around.
What about the TV?
The TV is another story, yeah. The TV was mine, and it was a Durabrand from Walmart, and right from the start that thing never did work properly. We'd take it from my room and out to the living room and to play vids or whatever, and the screen would go all green, but if I would walk it around the apartment for a good couple minutes, the screen would go back to normal and good. And I bought it for $100, and when I moved out of the apartment, I wasn't gonna take the TV with me, and I just said, "Hey, it's a good opportunity. Let's smash it up. You know, it's just an old TV that barely worked anyway. So yeah, it worked out perfectly."
Yeah, that TV is pretty classic. There's a lot of classic memories with that TV, especially when it would decide to go all green. And it's almost like having a dog or something. Like, Joel, I think you gotta take the TV for a walk again. And Joel would pick up and, you know, walk the TV around the house and come back, and we keep on playing.
Oh, sure enough, it'd work every time, though, you know, bring it back, and it would be perfect every time.
Oh, I never failed. It really loved its walks, you know.
Yeah, just got to show it some love.
Hi.
But it was fun putting this to death, that's for sure.
Good job on episode 12. And my question was, in episode 12, you got the big bad. I saw his profile on IMDb, and other people in the show who had were more professional actors, and I saw the profiles and googled them on the internet, and I was wondering how you got connections with these people.
As with almost every actor who's ever been in Pure Onage, we actually friends with friends. Bill, who plays the big bad, is a very, very good friend of ours for quite a few years now. He actually teaches acting at the Vancouver Film School out in Vancouver. And so, we knew that, we'd asked Bill over a year and a half ago if he wanted to play the sort of main bad guy in Pure Onage, and we've been super excited to work with him since then. So we were happy when the day finally came, last August, that we had a chance to film those scenes. And it was really great having such a professional actor on set. And it was just an incredible experience, and made me realize how far I have to go, and just how far you can go. And he was just so great that his first take, I think, sent goosebumps down everyone's arms and spines. So it was pretty cool. Coco Desti, who is in the TV exec scene, she's a personal friend of David Plant, who is the male TV executive, who is Miranda's dad. And so, yeah, and most people in Pure Onage work just like that. They're either fans of the show, or somehow we just meet them friends of a friend. We've never actually officially gone and cast them.
Okay, merci beaucoup.
Hey guys, my question today is to all of you, and I was kind of wondering, do you
sorry,
ever
can
find
I,
yourself?
Can I,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Can I interrupt for a second? I just wanted to add to that, to the answer to the last question about casting. Yes, it is mostly friends of friends, and that's the way we've had the most success. But in the past, we've done some casting just on our main website. For episode 9, Dave's sisters were cast from the main website. So I think actually in season 2 we might be putting up a casting announcement and getting anybody in the Toronto area that is a Pure Onage fan and wants to be in Pure Onage, and you think you can do something in front of the camera, you have these ideas for characters that we need filled, and who knows, you might send us something that invents a character. So yeah, we might be doing some season 2 casting from just the website, and have a casting at pureonage.com email address. That's been very successful for us in the past. All right, so sorry to interrupt your question. Why don't you go ahead and ask that question?
I know, man. I'm sorry to cut you off. What I was going to ask you was, do you guys ever find yourselves, like, in public, maybe slipping into character a little bit? Like, Jarrett, do you ever kind of, you see something funny, you laugh? Do you ever think about, does Lol ever slip out? Or Joel, do you ever kind of find yourself up on a balcony and all of a sudden you spot a few heads or something like that?
Well, I just want to say that I've never found myself tearing off my headphones and chucking them across the room or anything like that.
yeah.
No, yeah. Doug is definitely an exaggerated character of certain things that possibly have happened.
Yeah, and I know personally. I have found myself slipping into character here and there, and it's kind of funny. A lot of the times I don't realize it. Stacy or Jeff or someone that I'm around all the time will point it out to me that, dude, you were just kind of Jeremy there.
And I guess it's kind of funny, because Jeremy, I think, represents what's sort of deep down inside in a lot of hardcore gamers, you know, it's something you never really bring to the surface, but there, in terms of, you know, wanting to flaunt your victories and whatnot. So often when I'm, you know, playing a game and I do something that I think is really good or, you know, I win, I really can't help but have some of the sort of Jeremy idiosyncrasies come out. And you know, and actually, you know, the whole humping thing, you know, humping the monitor, that's something that's sort of been a part of my friend group for a very long time. And that's sort of been tainted forever. It seems impossible that I can now hump a controller or anything without feeling like I'm Jeremy. So I guess forever the Jarrett Kale controller hump is dead in favor of the Jeremy slightly more exaggerated controller hump.
The John Shores had a good spank on the gun barrel of Deer Hunter, though.
Yeah, I would like to thank John Shores. He did have, probably when we were growing up, the best hump out of all of us. And it definitely inspired me to be a better humper.
Cheers to John.
That's awesome. Thanks, guys.
Hey, guys, I was just wondering, Joe, what's your favorite map, your favorite gun, and what do you think about the new weapon pricing in CS?
Well, admittedly, I actually haven't played CS much lately. I've been hooked on Army Ops and the new patch, and I've been playing tons of 360 at my buddy Derek's plat. I feel bad, but CS in a couple months.
That sucks.
Yeah, I just needed something new, and I guess old, because Ops is definitely something I've been playing forever, but you know, it's always good to go back to you for some reason. For me, I don't know, I love it.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks for that, and good luck with the share.
Thanks, man.
Hi. I was just wondering, at what point in the show did you decide to make Kyle's face a secret? Did you plan it from the beginning, or did you just, after maybe a couple of episodes, realize you hadn't seen his face yet and thought to make that a running joke?
Yeah, it was a running joke from the beginning, and it was kind of, we just had this idea of this crazy film guy that would be doing crazy angles, shooting footage from the floor and all this, and it would be a funny thing if he was always behind the camera and you never knew what it looked like. And I think it made for a lot of mystery, a lot of people taking screenshots of reflections of Kyle. We put a few reflections in on purpose to you know, get people hungry for more. And I think it worked out to be something that was good. And, of course, I kind of like it that the last shot of, you know, during the climax of the season is Kyle's face. There you go. You got it. Because, you know, I can't hide forever, right? The Keep Kyle Hidden Club was actually very busy.
Cool. And I just like to thank you, because it was because of you, really, that I got a good computer that actually can play games. So thanks for that.
Awesome, man. I'm glad to see there's so many clan members out here to represent. Thanks for coming to the TeamSpeak, guys.
Yeah, that's cool.
Represent.
And,
I just want to say excellent job on the entire show and everything. And, Jarrett, after you got your hair money, did you use it for the show and website and traveling, or did you use it to party with the two Swedish girls?
Yeah, it was all hookers and blow, man. No, the hair money actually, while it was 100% my hair, it was sold as a Rafa Mayo Productions project. So the company just took the money, and actually the majority of it was spent on our trip to Holland. In fact, that's sort of how we justified being able to go at that time.
So yeah, most of it went to Holland, and the rest just kind of went to just improving the show and equipment here and there. None of it was really spent on the stuff that I really wanted to spend it on.
Sure. All right, thanks.
Well, I'm kidding. Obviously, we wanted to go to Holland, which was an amazing experience. I'd never been to Europe. But yeah, there was no hookers and blowers, is what I'm saying.
Okay, hi. I'm sorry about that. Basically, my question is, how much of the series did you have planned when you started off? Obviously, the first episode was, a small, that first idea that you were talking about. But obviously, you've been planning ahead the storyline now. I mean, how far, what point did you really think about, going off for 3 seasons and stuff?
I think we made the preview originally, and then that was received really well, and we knew that we would have to, we wanted to really make the show based on the demand effects. We made episode one, and it was received really well, and I think it was actually right after episode one, and maybe we had started production on episode two, interviewing those girls, when we really had to sit down and sort of think about everything that was happening and the rate at which the audience was growing and how realistic it was that this is a project that could sustain us and was worth quitting our jobs for and working on full time. And so I think it was around, after we had filmed episode 3 and 2 were actually made at the same time. A lot of people don't know that. We had filmed part of 3 before part of 2, part of 2 before part of 3. I think in the end we were finished both episodes at about the same time. And so it was right after that. It was after those 2 episodes were in the bag that we realized that we should not continue forward at all. Until we have a very solid idea of what's going to happen. So, we sat down and we worked it out, and we put a lot of thought into it. It sort of consumed my day and my days and my nights. When I wasn't thinking about Zero Hour, I was thinking about where the show should go. And so around episode 4, we had the series arced to three seasons. we thought we had a great story and a great message for the whole series, and Jeff and I and Joel, we're fans of quality entertainment. I was a big fan of The X-Files back in the day, and it always I always thought it was a really, really big mistake on their part to continue The X-Files beyond season 4, and I felt that way about a few series, that on the whole, a series and a story that you're telling and this piece of fiction you're creating, works best when you stick to your original idea and you keep it within, sort of short and concise and beautiful, and then that it will exist for all time as this great piece of art that people will enjoy and appreciate. And so we decided pretty seriously around episode 4 there would be 3 seasons, 36 episodes. We have the basic story in mind. We're very proud of it, and I expect that it's going to be something that will blow a lot of minds and people really like. And
yeah, that's cool. And also, just because I'm speaking and the other guys in RC are actually bombarding me right now, I've just got to ask, why, Doug? Why?
Man, how did you guys not see it coming?
Oh, I did personally, but
the humping of the head, man. He went dissed me when we were supposed to go play, make fun of the guys playing DDR, just non-stop. I couldn't take anymore. we'll see why. We'll definitely see why.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Look forward
why
to it.
Will be answered in season 2. It'll be great. And on, I think we all did a good job of setting it up. I think Joel's attitude, as he showed through the FPS Doug character, was just a slow progression towards, eventually turning. And I think, after you see it, you may gasp, but you may also think, of course, his parents are yelling at him. He's got nowhere to go, and Jeremy tells him to get the fuck out of there. It's I don't know. So that's why. But you'll find out more in season 2. Okay, before we move on to the next question, I'd just like to announce 2 new guests that we have here. One can answer all questions directed to the actor Chemo, who was the dog in episode 12. This is Stacy, the dog's owner, and knows all about the dog and can field all questions towards the dog. The other guest we
Chemo,
have here is
Stacy. How's it going?
And the other guest we have here. The other guest is Mr. Davin Langell, the World of Warcraft is a Feeling singer, also the special effects guy, also the special guest director of the fight scenes in Pyronage. So you can talk to him about all of his everything that is contained in his brain regarding Pyronage. So maybe if you guys have any questions for these two, we can voice some people or whatever and give them some mic time.
How did you spell Stacy or what?
He just voiced chemo.
Oh, sorry, no. They are both in the same room as us, so
you're just gonna voice a random guy.
No.
Hey,
Chemo's just some dude.
I just want to say what's up to both of them and or all of them and Chemo and much love and I miss you all out there.
Yeah, Joel, all the way from Calgary. Yeah, wish you could be here tonight, Joel.
Soon, I'll come out soon.
I hope that Joel and Chemo and Stacy and myself were roommates this past year, so that's how we all kind of not why we know each other, but how we know each other more intimately than we had before. And yeah, I miss Chemo too.
I wanted to ask. Oh yeah.
Sorry. I think we should get the queue moving because not many people have spoken. I think who's next? Is it Bersic? Is that how you say it?
Oh, okay. My question is: do you watch any internet TV?
Mic sounds very low.
You're a bit quiet.
Okay. Do you watch any internet TV shows?
Sorry, could you please repeat the question?
Do you watch any other internet TV shows?
Yeah. Do you watch an internet TV show?
Yeah, there's a few people that we've been in contact with. I watch. I always check out the new episode of Hack 5. Those guys are good guys that we've. They've actually took a lot of footage at the episode 12 screening. I think they might be doing a special on us. So stay tuned to Hack 5.
Yeah,
Hack
I know.
5. Oh, you know those guys, eh? Okay. And there's also, I'm a fan of TikiBarTV.com. I really like their stuff. So original, such a great cast, and, just amazing stuff they do. They've actually inspired me to get my chops up with editing. You know, I'm sort of like, feel that I'm an editing noob compared to these guys. Although they are working on, Macs, so they have some great filters and some powerful software there, but hopefully in season two I can be comparable to those guys, because I think they're very talented filmmakers as well. They're located in Vancouver actually, so they're also Canadian. It's nice to know there's so much IPTV going on in Canada.
Can I ask one more?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, why do we have wait so long for new episodes?
Well, so long. Is it really that long?
Yeah, I can wait. I can't wait for new one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's basically because, I guess people are used to having a TV show come out every week. You know, that's sort of the basic timeline of most television shows, is a new episode every week and then a season break in the summer. But those television shows also have, 125 people working on them, doing various specialized tasks. For the most part, we have two or three people working on the show, and that's not exactly 125. So that's pretty much your answer, is that we don't really specialize in our tasks and we don't have a streamlined process. If we can come up with a 46 minute episode in 3 months, I guess that's on par with sort of movie production schedules. But I sort of think of it as a series of short films, because we do have a minimum complement of staff here.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Thank you.
Mostly Harmless would like to know, the short film you showed in episode 5, was that actually like an old project you did, or was that done for the show?
Well, Strong Man, Angry Man is a short film that was based, it was, the idea of the film is to make fun of short films. You know, I grabbed the camera and got William Craig, who's actually the voice of the master. He's the guy who's writing in his notebook. And Levi Namaseb is a great, great guy. He's actually a professor of comparative literature at Namibia University. There's a lot. There's actually a lot to the film, a lot more than I expected. But I expected it to be, you know, sort of this substanceless, you know, little short film that was shot. It really took us 40 minutes to shoot the thing. I just got a bunch of shots, and he dances by the guy, whatever. And Levi brought a mask. So I'm like, hey, put the mask on. You know, that'd be cool. It'd be all trippy and short filmy. So we shot the short film. We're supposed to make fun of short films and how crappy they are, the art house genre. In any way, my opinion. But you know, I imagine there's some short films a similar style with merit, but I haven't seen them. But anyway, there are some cool things about the film, and that is Levi is singing a song in some ancient Namibian bush language that is only spoken by 9 people on the planet Earth. He speaks this language, and it's a dying language, and you know, he's among a handful of people that speak this language. So I think it's very cool that we can hear that song that is so ancient and almost extinct. You know, I don't know. It looks kind of like filmy. You know, the right lighting conditions were there, and it looks kind of like film. And you know, I think it's sort of a joke at the end that it was written and directed by Kyle. But it's like, you know, what did you have to write? Like, it's like a bunch of guys, just whatever, a bunch of shots put together. But anyway, I've seen short films at short film festivals, and honestly, like, I'm like, wow, Strong Man, Angry Man is pretty good.
Did you respond to a question about that film in a previous fan chat where you actually had to, you know, admit to loving it? Like, oh, I was so excited about working with that. Yeah,
I did. I remember that one.
Did I say once as Kyle that I liked it and it was like a serious project?
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, it's totally amazing. And it's all my passion and work, and, you know, this guy is totally amazing, and it's a collaborative project and stuff. I was like, yeah, sure.
Oh, Strong Man, Angry Man is way better than Pure Onage, man. I should just have the whole short film and, like, scene. That should be the whole show, right?
I'd watch that.
Oh yeah, sorry, I almost forgot. There's one other thing that's really good about Strong Man, Angry Man, and that is we had Catherine Manoukian playing the violin. She's playing a Bartok concerto, and I had her in the studio. You know, I heard that there's this world-class violinist, and she is incredible. She is absolutely, you know, world-class. She plays with, she's got a new album out with the Armenian Symphony Orchestra. She's a violin prodigy, and she's very young and very amazing, and her violin skills just blew me away. I'm like, wow, I can't believe this person's in my studio recording. And yeah, so she plays that Bartok concerto that you hear over Strong Man, Angry Man.
Okay, so who's next in the queue?
Yeah, I think that's me.
Go
okay,
for it.
So yeah, I just want to do a. Congratulate you guys on the show. It's a great show. I've been watching it since about episode 5. I love it. My question's for all three of you guys, mainly Kyle. Well, Jeff. It's about the waitress in episode 12, Elena Soboliva. Did you guys, like, know her from before? Did you meet her? Or what's up with that?
Elena is a student that I met at Trinity College when I was living there. There's a lot of students that I've actually met at Trinity that ended up in the show, like Wenyin. Wenyin is one of the bad guys in China, and I just approached him in the dining hall. I'm like, dude, you look like an evil Asian guy. Can I put you in my show? And he's like, okay, that's cool. Yeah, but Elena, she looked like a, you know, Bloor Street waitress, And I thought she was good for the part, and yeah, we had fun working with her on that. And I didn't know, some people post on the forums that she was a Miss Canada World or whatever contestant. So, yeah, very talented gal. And yeah, I didn't know about that until someone posted on the forums.
You didn't actually get her number, did you?
But it makes I got a number when I'm like, hey, what's your number? You want to be in the show? And she like gave me her number, so... Yeah, I guess I got a number, but I'm not calling her in the way that Kyle would be calling her.
Are you guys planning on bringing her back into the show in like episode season 2 as like your girlfriend or anything like that?
Well, you know, I usually tell people they don't want to know about the future of your owners. You just want to see it. So we'll leave it at that.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Awesome, man.
Hi. Great show. Just like to say, great show. Everyone in my clan loves it, Interpol. So, yeah, my question is, what did Joel actually do for education, and what's the deal with Jeff and film school?
Joel, you want to go first?
I guess not.
Oh, maybe Joel's AFK. Joel actually has surprised us many times on set. Where there's been, you know, Joel has all these hidden talents that, you know, we've known the guy for years, and suddenly, you know, these hidden talents come out. Like I remember one day on set, you know, we're like, hey, Joel, can you jump and do this or whatever? You know, Joel does a lot of jumping. He does a lot of the jumping and stunts. Like in episode 12, I can't believe like. He was jumping from that fountain and landing on stairs. But, you know, and Joel's like, oh, yeah, man, I used to do tumbling and gymnastics and shit. You know, it's like one of Joel's many hidden talents. We're like, what? We didn't hear about this. Yeah, I did this for years. I used to do gymnastics and compete and all. Anyway, it was really funny. And I remember when we were on set, Joel was jumping on the rocks in the fountain behind Anastasia and Jeremy playing DS. And I'm like, okay, Joel, you jump around the rocks and, you know, pretend like you're like playing like CS, you know, with your guns out and stuff. And, you know, Joel's jumping on the rocks. And I'm like, well, can you jump more like this? And I went to jump on the rocks and I'm like, holy fuck, Joel, these rocks are slippery. I can't believe you were jumping on these rocks. Like, what the hell? Like, what are you doing listening to me? Like, this is super dangerous. And I honestly, I couldn't jump on these rocks. It was like required too much skill and whatever. And Joel just does it with no hesitation. So anyway, yeah, that's one story about Joel and his hidden talents.
I guess he's a good bunny hopper.
Sorry, guys, I had to run out of the room real quick. I missed the question.
It was, what did you actually do for education?
Oh, well, I graduated from Lord Beaverbrook High School. And then went on to take a couple years of business administration because originally me and one of my good buddies were going to go open up a clothing store on Nanaimo, which is out in BC in Canada, and just live the life out there and surf and do whatnot. And then he, can't remember what exactly happened, but some circumstances came up where he had to leave. And I dropped out after that and got really interested in filming and have been doing that nonstop since.
All right, thanks.
Was there another question for me? I can't remember.
Yeah, what was the deal with you and film school?
Oh, well, you know what? I think of my film school as being pure ownage. You know, we started out really noob and just messing around with the camera, and I sort of learned a lot. And another big part of my film school was when I was living in residence at the U of T going to school, and I would download, you know, about a movie a day and just watch a movie a day from various sources on the internet and various file sharing programs. I was just addicted to cinema, and you could get so much great media on the internet. It was so accessible that I would just chain movies. I'd spend so much time watching movies on my computer. And, yeah, I really got addicted, and I'm like, wow, if I could only do this you know, as a profession. I would really love it. And I decided then I would be pursuing seriously a profession as a filmmaker. So yeah, really, I've never been to film school, and as far as the technical aspects of filmmaking going, you know, I studied optics and in physics, and you know, it really, it has a lot to do with you know, digital filmmaking and lenses and whatnot. So it all came pretty much pretty easily. If you know, if you have a technical background, digital filmmaking isn't all that difficult to wrap your head around. So in some sense, you know, there's still a lot of things I don't know. I'm a big noob in a lot of ways, but you know, I have a background in audio engineering just as my hobby, and watch a lot of movies, and you know, if you understand math, you can understand digital filmmaking. So that's where I'm coming from as a filmmaker.
Okay, thanks.
And I just want to make another announcement. We have another new guest here that is in the same room as Jared and I. We have Miranda Plant, the lovely Anastasia. So if you guys want to talk to her, feel free to field questions.
Hey, Miranda.
I've got, like, a couple of questions. One is that, have you ever found yourself, like, not enjoying a game that you really like, but it's because the people you play with or the community?
Yeah, I guess maybe I have found myself in that position a couple times where you really like a game, and I guess oddly enough that might be part of the root, you know, it's part of how pretty much got started, I think, because that day that I was just sort of being Jeremy and at Jeff's place, and we were getting test footage, and the character Jeremy himself was sort of entirely actually inspired by my hatred of a lot of people that were sort of like that in the Generals and Zero Hour community. The idea that you're a pro, you know, like Jeremy in episode one, how he's pro, but he doesn't actually make money, and this and that. So a lot of that, it was rooted in the fact that I had this sort of disdain for the community that I was a part of and had to be a part of, because as a competitive player, you have to keep up with what's happening in the community. You need to watch the replays. You need to see what else everyone's doing. And so it's funny that you ask that, because maybe Zero Hour might be the prime example of a game that I almost didn't want to play, because I actually didn't like most of the people I played with, except for a very select few that I met that were very intelligent, kind people that I played with. But for the most part, I didn't contribute to the forums. I never posted my replays. I never did any of that because, you know, I didn't ever really feel too much a part of it, because I felt it was a little too immature for my personal taste and whatnot. So yeah, but for the most part, I mean, if it's a game you love, nothing's going to come in between you and the game, at least not for me, not my personality type. When I really love something and I get down to it, I just have to do it hardcore. I have to be the best, and that's what I do. So I just kind of put up with the crap.
Yeah, and my other question is, I know that you get, like, a lot of aggro from, like, people, like, saying you suck and that. Has this, like, forced you to stop making the show?
Sorry, could you please repeat that? We missed that.
Do you know how you get, like, a lot of abuse from, like, fans and that? Has that ever stopped you from, like, making the show?
Oh, no. Definitely the praise far outweighs the abuse. You know, the abuse isn't a problem. Once you have a number of fans or people that know of your existence, you will obviously be getting an abuse via email and whatever PMs. But, you know, it's never in real life as far as our experience goes. So lucky. But, you know, it's definitely there's a much more of an outpour of support from the fans than there is negativity.
Yeah, and like, a couple of weeks ago, I became, like, a real WoW addict, but I've, like, kind of stopped playing it because I got so addicted. I was playing from, like, 9 in the morning till, like, 2 a.m., so I, like, stopped playing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, if you got stuff to do in real life, it's not a good idea to get heavy into WoW. you know, if you can afford to take a vacation or you've got the summer off from school, you know, maybe it's a good idea to go hardcore. But if you have the kind of personality that needs to own in games, as we visited in episode 6 and 7, it might not be a good idea to take WoW too seriously.
Yeah, I get like a lot of aggro since play like Source at college, and it's like people are like, why don't you die? And it really gets on my nerves. Well, I like to say the show owns and good luck in the future.
Awesome, man. Thanks for your questions.
I was wondering, me and my friend were at least, you say Mushi Mushi in episode 12 to answer your phone like they do in Japan, but like, what's the significance? Because I don't think you'd just put that in there for no reason.
It's a Kill Bill reference.
Yeah, see, a lot of people, they attribute a lot of stuff in the show to Tarantino. I was surprised. I read those forum posts, Wyman, where the people were talking about how it was a Kill Bill reference. But that's just, that was just because she was speaking Japanese on the phone, that character. It was also funny when I was watching the screening in Calgary, I was sitting beside some fans and they saw, you know, how we returned to the beginning. Tetris battle at the end of episode 12. I hope there's nobody that hasn't seen it here because I'm spoiling it. But, you know, and everyone was like whispering, oh, Tarantino, you know, as in the Pulp Fiction, any of you pricks fucking move, I'll execute every last motherfuckers or whatever. You know, it's funny how Tarantino gets credit for so much stuff like the non-linear storyline and the Mushi Mushi. But really, the non-linear storyline, you know, is in many films. And we just thought it was a great opportunity to do that here, to have a nice, you know, slap you in the face ending with something cool. And the Mushi Mushi is just because, you know, Jeremy's, you know, a lot of video games are made by Japanese people. And, you know, I thought it was a cool aspect of the character that, he would answer the phone in that way and just be a little different, a little bit more gamey. But, yeah, that's definitely, the way that, you answer the phone in Japanese when you are speaking to a machine, not in real life. It doesn't mean hello. It's kind of funny that in English it's synonymous with the real life greeting. But there's a funny Simpsons fact that a friend of mine was talking to me about a few weeks ago, that the way that Montgomery Burns answers the phone, he says ahoy hoy when he answers the phone, which is actually the way that Alexander Graham Bell suggested people answer the telephone back in the original phone days. He said, when you answer the phone, you should say ahoy hoy. So it's really an old school way of answering the phone, which became hello in our culture. Different, but it would have been different in real life. Imagine answering the phone ahoy hoy. It's kind of like mushy mushy.
Yeah, and Kimo, the dog, like, is he a Tarantino reference?
Sorry, what reference?
What reference? Tarantino, like, what's his, just that kind of
he's talking about the Littlest Hobo reference, which is a classic Canadian reference that only Canadian fans should probably get.
Yeah, if you're not Canadian, you won't know what the hell, you know, Kimo's doing at the end there. It was something I posted on the forums. It was something strictly for the Canadians, and I said in my post that if you are Canadian and you do get it, you do understand why we had to do that. Because the Littlest Hobo is just the Littlest Hobo, man. He owns.
Well, thanks, guys. That was, yeah, you guys have just been, like, up there in the top people, like, that I not necessarily worship, but look up to, so thanks.
Awesome, man. Feel free to worship us again sometime. I'm just kidding. Awesome, man. Thanks for your questions.
All right, guys.
All right. Okay, so is it up to me? Nope. Yeah, anyway, I was supposed to ask a question about that TV program thing, but since it was kind of dealt with before, I was just thinking of complimenting you about the final episode and... well, personally, my favorite episode is the Lanageddon one, and I was just wondering when I was watching it that were the final comments in the episode just made up or scripted as well, like the guy calling you leaderless, coolest. He thought they were. This is for Kyle.
Yeah, that was the end of Lanageddon. Actually, happened 10 minutes after us setting foot inside Lanageddon. So we, we decided that when we first arrived, we weren't going to do any of this show. We were just going to get spontaneous footage and see how people reacted to us. And, you know, our show is about, you know, I guess 5% as big as it is now then. So, you know, we can walk into a LAN party and people will be like, oh, who are they? I don't know. And then some people will be like, oh, my God, it's Pironage. Back then, you know, we only had a small subset of the fans that we have now. It was around episode 5 when we shot that footage, actually. So these guys came out to us and they recognized us and they just said what they said, and that's what was ended up. That's what we used at the end of episode 8, was just those guys talking about Kyle and Jeremy saying he's going to own them. So that was definitely not scripted. That was just impromptu.
All right, it's cool. Anyway, another question. Have you ever just participated in familiar tournaments like Lanageddon, or actually played in tournaments and won anything? Or
I've been to a few LANs. For the most part, I seem to be cursed with always falling in love with games that don't seem to be played too often for money, unfortunately. So I haven't had the opportunity to have too many real life LAN victory experiences for cash, something that I'm hoping to really change over the next few years now that we're credited. I expect I'm playing Supreme Commander right now, and I'll be playing Command & Conquer 3, I imagine. And there's some games coming out that I hope are quality enough that I can fall in love with them and play them competitively, because I have no doubt that I can be very successful in that arena. But mostly, you know, especially I come from a generation that you know, before the LAN party, so to me, you know, competitive gaming was inviting 8 of my buddies over and kicking their ass in Mortal Kombat back in the day or something, right? So unfortunately, I know I haven't had the experience that I would have had I grown up 10 years later, and especially in the sort of climate today, the gaming climate of having so many LAN parties and so many cash tournaments. So I'm actually, you know, I'm very, very excited for the next few years. Now, especially that we're credited, I can attend LANs and compete in them. So you should be expecting that.
All right, sounds cool. Anyway, I thank you, and I'm really looking forward for the future episode of Pure Ownage. Sorry.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we're looking forward to making it. Before I move on, I've got a question here, actually, for somebody. This question is for Ms. Miranda Plant. I want her to explain, you know, how did you get involved with Pironage? What happened?
All right, well, I was sitting at the cafeteria at university at dinner talking to one of my friends about the shitty drama class we just had. And Jeff comes over to me and he goes, "Hey, are you an actor?" And I went, "Yeah." He goes, "Okay, cool. Well, I have this internet TV show that I want you to, like, audition for." And I went, "Oh, internet TV show. You mean like a porn?" And he's like, "No, just like come audition and check it out." So I was sort of hesitant, to say the least, but I went to his room and had the audition, but it was with Jarrett and Jeff sitting there in the room, and it's just like there's a couch and like that's all, and like it's at this point it was still sort of up in the air, but you know what, I was open to new opportunities, so I don't know. I don't really know how it all happened. I don't know why I went along with it in the first place, but it just was really fun, and they were good guys.
Hey, I have a quick question for you, Miranda. I think when Jeff came over, you mentioned that you're doing some other work on stage. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, like what stage acting have I done?
Yeah, he said that you're doing something at the moment, or you had another project? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I do lots of theater. I was just in a play at the university, Antigone, and like I do Greek tragedy, Shakespeare, like all sorts of theater. In the summer, I traveled and did a show, a British farce in Summerstock, which is like a big thing in Canada, in Stratford. So it was pretty cool. Like I've been in quite a few plays, so I don't know if you want me to list them.
I was just wondering, how does it compare? I mean, which do you like better? Do you like being, you know, in front of the camera or on stage with a live audience, or?
Good question. The two are totally different. I mean, Pierrange is different to itself because I'm filming and I know Jeff, right? It's not just a blank cameraman who I've never met before and I'm just sort of acting to a camera. I'm sort of working with a team of people, and Pierrange is amazing in that respect, that like it's definitely a team working together. But in terms of commercial work and other film work that I've done, it's pretty lifeless. I mean, you just sort of look at this black lens and have to pretend that it's a million different things. So in that respect, I do like theater more, but Pierrange is definitely the best experience of film that I've ever had.
Hi. Hey, my name is Sparrowboy. Fuck! So...
Fuck.
Right.
So...
Up to you. I'm just saying. Up to you, Wyman. But yeah, just see. Yeah, go on.
Well, yeah, I basically treat Pierrange like my religion. I don't have. Serious. Like I don't play many good games because my PC is crap. So I play a lot of the classic games like Doom and Quake and stuff. So I was just wondering, I heard in, like, episode 3, FPS Doug said something that, you know, they played Doom at the beginning. What was that about?
Joel, you want to take that question?
Well, yeah, I mean, me and Jared in real life have been friends forever, and... yeah, we used to play Doom and the Unreal Tournament series and all those old FPSs, and yeah, it was a good time. I don't play them that much anymore, but I wouldn't mind maybe going back reminiscing.
Oh, yeah.
I remember back in the day, I remember, you know, hearing about the very first FPS game, which was Castle Wolfenstein, and I remember it was described to me by Derek Sweet, the guy that's sitting right beside Joel right now, and he said, you know, it's a game where it's kind of like the guns are always in the middle of your screen, and you're running around like a maze, and you shoot people, and it was like, and I just, like, conceived of the FPS genre, and I was like, oh, my God, that owns, like, imagine you run around from out of the eye view, and you shoot people, like, it was, like, a really weird thing back in the day, because no games could... handle, you know, in the old days, no computers could handle the 3D motion effects, and Castle Wolfenstein got around it because it was actually a 2D game. There was never any room that was above another game. It was like a fake 3D kind of game, so the computer didn't think it was 3D, but the user sure as hell thought it was 3D. It wasn't until Doom, where you know, that was sort of the second big. The second big FPS game, and Doom Alpha came out. It was a leaked alpha version, and you could run around a maze, and the graphics were just the next step up, and it was true 3D. I believe Doom was true 3D in anyway, and it was multiplayer, and FPS multiplayer just blew me away back in the day. Like I used to play on a LAN that my buddies had set up, but you know, it was incredible to witness the birth of FPS and play Duke Nukem 3D, the original, and Doom and Wolfenstein, you know. So yeah, we had to put that in the show. We had to reference the origin of FPS.
Oh yeah, yeah. I still played a lot on like on the recent ports. I also had another question. is Jeremy Jarrett Kale and Miranda Plant actually going out and like girlfriend boyfriend thing?
We are not officially girlfriend and boyfriend. We're just good friends, and you know, we have a lot of fun together. And she's a really great girl, but no, she's not my girlfriend. So go nuts with the wedding invitations.
Oh, cool. Anyway, that's about it. This was really awesome. I really wanted to go to the episode 12 premiering, but I couldn't make it, and I was really mad. But me and my friends came over. We played, like, Doomland stuff, so it was all not so bad. Anyway, thanks for having me on. Great job on the show. I love it.
Awesome, man. Thanks.
Thanks, man. That's cool. Take care.
Okay. Hi, guys. Yeah, hi, guys. I should probably tell you something a bit about myself at this moment. I haven't slept for about a good 40 hours, I think. And for some reason, there's a strange, huge mouse pad laying next to me. Well, let me just say that I fucked my mouth drownage. And you guys might recall a certain thread I made a few months ago in a PP discussion about a LAN I attended. You guys know that one?
Am I pro?
Or not, yes. I was there again, well, yesterday, and for some reason I ended up with third prize, even though the games were like absolutely shit, like would help players racing games competitively on a PC. Well, but that's not the real point. The point is, I can't really, it just seemed, turned out to me like every time, how much you guys really, well, gave me without really knowing, because if it was you guys, I would probably never be motivated to actually get these lines and not win like this fucking awesome Q-pad, Clove mouse pad, which has like some Ghost Recon shit all over it, and, you know, win prizes. So, you know, for first, I'd just really like to thank you guys for that in the first place.
Wow, thank you. Honestly, I probably couldn't communicate well enough how much it means to me to hear people say that stuff, because you know, especially as someone who grew up as a hardcore gamer so many years ago, and it was, you know, those opportunities weren't really there for me, and it was, you know, it wasn't really looked at the same way in terms of being a sport or you being a cyber athlete, and yeah, just to hear that's motivated you to get out and do that stuff and to provide you with the spirit to win, that is just, that's incredible. So thank you so much.
Yeah, well, I gotta hurry up because I got like jumped up the queue for, well, thanks to Ragnia. But I got a quick, well, it's directed to Joel, really. You know, you guys have been, well, I noticed you guys have been hiding a few things because I probably know a bit more about you guys than the average, well, does now. So, let me just ask you straightforward, Joel. What was it like to smoke a bong with Scree?
Oh, Scree, yeah. That was a crazy night, that's all I have to say. And me, Scree, Denwo, and Jay had a good time out here in Calgary. And yeah, Scree was looking pretty hurting by the end of the night, but it was funny.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. I still have a picture laying around he gave me. Oh.
Denwo and Jay are the two castle guards, by the way. They were here in Toronto. Denwo and Jay from the UK and Scree from the Netherlands. They all visited, and we shot the Tetris battle footage when they were visiting. And yeah, it was great that they came out and hung out with us. Now, is Scree here? Is he busy tonight? Is he here in the chat?
I haven't seen him around, so I'm afraid not.
Here, but Denwo's here.
Oh, we should give Denwo a voice. He's got some stuff to say, I'm sure.
He has voice.
Oh, he does. Okay, he's just been silent. I'd also like to say that Wyman is a great guy that we had. We were lucky
enough to have some beers with in the Netherlands. We actually, this footage will be on the Pure Runners DVD. It's some amazing footage of when we went to the Netherlands and we surprised fans. We just showed up at Scree's house and said, "Hey, Scree, what's going on?" Because he had ordered some Noom Store stuff. We had his address, and we surprised him. It was really hilarious. The footage is great. And Wyman, we invited him out, or Scree invited him out. We set him up with Scree and Luke's, and Scree and Luke's called him up and said, "Hey, let's get some beers in Leiden." And Leiden is a small town in the Netherlands. And we said, "Yeah, we'll hang out and we'll have a good time, you know, just some Pure Runners fans getting together." And then Kyle and Jeremy walk around the corner in the bar and sit down with Wyman, and he had a pretty funny reaction, which we also cut on tape. So that kind of stuff will be on the DVD.
Yeah, it was actually in the night.
It was actually in the... Sorry, I didn't realize I had voice. I am here listening and stuff. Demo.
Oh, nice demo. Yeah. Hey, did I get the town wrong, Wyman? Which town was that?
It's called Nijkerk. I don't know if it doesn't really matter. I just have like one last question for Anastasia or Amanda, and then I really have to go now. So, yeah.
All right. She's here standing by.
All right. All right, Amanda. You remember at the very first fan chat we had that was organized here, and I had to go early. And apparently you asked for me, and you had a question for me or something, which I found, pretty funny. And, I know this sounds a bit obsessive, but why did you call on me then? I'm really curious, actually, for some reason.
I forget, you know, it's been a long time ago. I probably just wanted to talk to you because I recognized your name from the forum. So now I get to talk to you. Yay.
All right, I wouldn't really expect to remember it. I probably wouldn't even have remembered myself. Do you have any questions? Because I sure don't.
I think we better get the key moving. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Miranda.
No, I was just going to say that, Wyman, you're Wyman. I just wanted to... give a shout-out to you, that's all.
And you're Miranda, and I just totally misspelled your name or whatever, and here's my shout-out to you.
Get a room.
Sure.
Awesome, guys. All right, let's move on down the queue. We want to get as many people the opportunity to chat. We got to go here in about 20 minutes, unfortunately, so let's keep moving on.
All right, hey, guys.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, I wanted to ask about the DVD that's coming out. I was wondering what kind of features you were going to put on it, maybe some commentaries or documentaries. What can we expect there? Cheers, and I love episode 12, and I look forward to next season. Thanks.
Yeah, we're going to try and do director's commentary with Jarrett and myself on every episode. We're going to try and do that. We're also going to have a lot of interviews with the cast. And, bloopers, behind-the-scenes kind of stuff. I've talked to Davin about doing a sort of special effects kind of thing, you know, do-it-yourself kind of at-home special effects kind of featurette. But we'll see. We'll try and jam as much stuff as we can in there. And, of course, every episode in DVD quality, we do shoot in 720 by 480, so it's a lot higher res than what you see on the Internet, so it'll be very crisp when you watch it at home. So that's what we have planned for the DVD.
Is that awesome. Including episode 1? Because that had pretty bad quality online.
Yeah, it includes episode 1. It includes also the preview that comes before 1 that many people haven't seen, most likely. And it also, I should mention that we re-encoded from the DVD episodes 1 through 12, and we have them on Bright Cove Streaming now that are at 480 by 360 resolution, so... If you watch the streams of episodes 1 through 4, they will be in higher quality. Actually, you will see less compression artifacts because we're using an old version of DivX single pass encoding. So episodes 1 through 4 are pretty low quality in some parts. You can actually rewatch them in better quality, and actually episodes 1 through 4 were not the correct aspect ratio. They're actually stretched 10%, so everybody looks all fatter, and Jeremy looks super fat in episodes 1 through 4. If you watch the old AVIs that are still on the downloads page, but if you watch the new streams, they're the proper aspect ratio, and they should be better quality. So yeah, we did re-encode those, and of course they'll be mint on the DVD. They'll be very nice quality.
All right, cool. Thanks, man. Love the show.
Awesome. Thanks for your question.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Mr. Circo, I'm glad
Circo,
you showed up here today. And I'm telling you, Joel, we had the pleasure of having some beers with Circo and his dad at the premiere, and they're great guys. It's great to finally meet Mr. Circo in real life, and I was expecting some clang, but no, he didn't bring it. that's a cardinal sin joke, but anyway, so Circo, what's going on?
Nothing much. I just wanted to ask you something. What was your guys' inspiration for the Tadgy Guild drama scene? I'm sure a few people don't know what that's all about.
Oh, you want me to name drop somebody here, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, guild drama, and, you know, we had a little lesson in episode 12 about repairing before the guild and getting your mats and not having to hold up 40 people, because people don't realize that when you are holding up a raid in World of Warcraft, it's 40 people. And that's a lot of time you are wasting. People sitting at 39 people sitting at their keyboards waiting for you while you're in Ironforge, taking your sweet time, buying mats, which a certain member of the guild did. And it's a long story, but anyway, he took a lot of time buying mats and flew back to Ironforge and then complained he didn't get a summon, when in fact I went back to Ironforge and was back way before he was. And I'm a warlock, and, you know, I, you know, he didn't even ask me for a summon, and but anyway, he was just a very interesting guy. And then he came back to the raid after wasting all of our time. Everyone was waiting for him, and then he jumped around and didn't buff us. He was a druid, and, you know, the Mark of the Wild wasn't getting buffed, and, you know, I think it's my favorite buff. But anyway, this guy was just, anyway, he was really just blew my mind at how inefficient of a player he was in the guild. And anyway, so this is, I should stop talking about this because it's just for the WoW people, but anyway, that was the inspiration for the prepare before the raid speech in episode 12.
Yeah, and Joel, I'll agree with you. Keanu Reeves is a very wooden actor.
Wooden, we will act.
Yeah.
Oh, busted there. Circo's been doing some digging about our past.
Yeah, can I join the Keanu Reeves players?
Yeah. Only the most elite get into the Keanu Reeves players.
Awesome to talk to you, Circo.
Yeah, man.
Hey, I just got a quick question for Jarrett. I was just wondering, I think you did some stand-up comedy before. I was just wondering how much success you've had with that in the past. And I think you did some work for the comedy club or something. I'm not sure. Screeo, someone was telling me when they looked up some information on you.
Yeah, I did. In Canada here, there's a big popular sort of like this mainstream comedy chain called Yuck Yucks that's all across Canada. And so out west in Alberta and Calgary, I was with Yuck Yucks for a couple of years, and I didn't really tour much. You know, I did a few other rooms and this and that, but mostly stayed centered in Calgary. And as for success, you know, when it came to sort of Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights with the mainstream older audience, I wouldn't say I found the biggest success, as you know, a good portion of my material had to do sort of with obviously what I could relate to. My stand-up is surprisingly different from what you would expect given Pironage. It's really sort of dark stuff. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, sort of video games and or drugs and or religion or sort of these topics that the average old person can't really relate to. So when it came to college nights and university nights, I would destroy the room because people were starved to hear someone make jokes about Metroid Prime on stage, which no one else really does. And you know, just in general, my comedy was sort of directed towards a more youthful audience. So in Yuck Yucks and in most stand-up comedy, success is based on your ability to make 50-year-olds laugh, which is something I'm not really interested in. I'm not going to, you know, ever sort of dumb down or make my comedy any more generic for a mainstream audience. And I think that most of you who hopefully have a chance to see some of my stand-up or at least see recordings of it will see why it's not mainstream acceptable, a lot of it. But I think a lot of you are really going to dig it, especially sort of the video game content because of the rarity of seeing that sort of content in stand-up comedy.
That's great. I think FPS Dave is next. Go for it, FPS Dave.
Yo, how's my mic? Is it
okay?
Alright, now that we're on a topic of WoW, I was laughing before when this guy named Small Fry came in, and he said he was gaming from 8 to 9. I just want to say that you better quit WoW before it ruins your life, dude. I know from experience. All right. my question to you guys is... due to your success, due to the success of your videos, has it sparked like a newfound confidence in your creative thinking and abilities?
Absolutely. Beforehand, when you're making something that you really believe is funny... you try to convince other people it's really funny, and a lot of the content, I guess, that you would even see in Pure Orange is considered very niche. So we've always sort of been inclined, which makes sense, right? I think most people will be inclined to towards the same things, that you write what you know, and you write about what you do. With regards to maybe my stand-up in the past, when you're performing for a bunch of gray-haired people and they're not laughing at something that you know is really funny, that there are about millions of people online that would kill themselves laughing at, there's a bit of resent and whatnot, and you don't feel as motivated. But having the success that Pierre just had and realizing that I'm not alone, that there are millions of people out there that love games as much as I do and want to laugh at that sort of humor. Really the confidence boost is just incredible, and now, you know, there's just no stopping us. We're going to just keep doing this for the rest of our lives, and I really believe that it will be very successful.
That's wicked. Thanks a lot. Joel, you're my fucking hero. Later, guys.
Bye-bye.
Man, Joel is all of our heroes. Come on. Joel, are you still there? He's taking a break. Okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Okay, just wondering. Yeah, it's great. I'm getting a lot of hero-ness action here. I just want to give the microphone to somebody here, because I have some questions for him that I'd like people to hear. His name is Davin Langell, and he is a super behind-the-scenes guy in Pierronage. And I'd just like to ask him, you know, how did you get involved with Pierronage? This is my first question for Davin. How did you get involved with the Pierronage crew?
Hey, guys. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I'm a fan of the fans. And I mean that. I've gone to the Blur releases, and I've listened to you guys on previous fan chats online, and I've read some of I'm not quite a crawler of the posts on the forums, but I read them from time to time, and you guys are just awesome. Like, really, the whole show feeds off of the amazing energy of the fans, which is you guys. Okay, enough fan crap. So, me, I used to make a little show called Yellow Ninja, which was like a movie. That I made and then somehow on Jeff's advice put online, because Jeff was like way ahead of the curve way before Google Video, way before YouTube putting their stuff online, and I thought that was a cool idea so I could share it with as many people as possible, because the whole idea was not commercial, just like their shows, like share it with the fans. And I remember when I was making my last Yola Ninja, one night I put on a trailer so that people could watch it. I was trying to get some interest so people could go and see it in the movie. And Jeff approached me, a buddy of mine just from college, and he said, hey, I make this show, and I want to show an episode at the same time as you show your trailer to like a room full of like, I think, 200 people or something. So I said, yeah, sure. Of course, all of us internet producers are kind of snobs. So I was like, yeah, whatever. Some dude makes a little show. Why not give him some slack, and yeah, I'll let him show his little Pironch thing at the same time as I show my Yellow Ninja thing. And it was awesome. I watched like his half an hour show. I think this was episode 3. It was the one that began with the red versus, which episode was it? Episode 4. So it was episode 4. And I was like, actually, when I finished watching it, I thought it was pretty cool. And of course, now his show has gone nuts, and it's super popular because he hit like you guys as like the perfect market, the perfect online audience, just killer. And yeah, that was kind of how I first saw the show. And briefly, my involvement was when they needed a fight scene between the Master and Jeremy, kind of like that sort of semi-dream sequence. And they asked me if I'd help out, and I said, oh, yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to help out, because I'd just done a ton of fight sequences, and then I helped out, and that was it. And that was how I got involved with the show. Ever since then, they keep giving me new things to do, special effects, this and that, a little bit of assistant directing. I love it. So I try and show up whenever they ask me to on set and help out.
Awesome. Yeah, Davin has made 6 ninja movies, full length. I think you can see the latest. Yellow Ninja 6 is at theyellowninja.com. Yeah, you can watch it all. I think you've got all the streams up, right? Yeah, it's all there. And in fact, you may notice a few characters. George Kovacs, the spy in Pironage, plays a major character in the Yellow Ninja. And in fact, I am in the Yellow Ninja, and nobody caught it that, you know, Kyle's face is in the yellowninja.com. You know, during the, I play the tabla drums and during the Bollywood dance sequence, so you get to see me. And actually, beside me is Mr. Kale. Jarrett Kale and Kyle are doing a cameo in the Yellow Ninja, and this was released. This was released 6 months ago, and nobody noticed. So there you go, you guys that dig up secret stuff about us on the internet. You didn't catch that one, did you?
Bollocks. I'm pretty sure there was a post in the forums about it. I don't know, maybe someone showed it to me.
People in IRC are complaining.
Yeah, that got by Circo even. Even Circo, the guy that seems to, and also Scree didn't even catch that. Some of you may even have found out about Davin Langell's latest project, which I won't mention. I'll leave that a secret. It's been launched on the internet, so you'll have to find that. But before we move on, can I request voice for somebody? His name is Delisank. D-E-L-I-C-I-N-Q. He is a friend of ours that I'd just like to ask a quick question. Delisank, do you have a microphone? Oh, we're not hearing you. I see the green light, but I'm not hearing you.
Lame.
Oh, there, I heard you say lame.
Just wanted to ask Jeremy, a.k.a. Jarrett, if he really thinks he was beating us at Mortal Kombat.
Dude, you know you couldn't take my sector, man. What are you talking about?
No, I wanted to commend you guys on a good episode. Episode 12 is my favorite, and keep going. And, yeah, when I see you in Calgary, I'm going to kick your ass at Smash Brothers.
Yeah, man, yeah. Thanks so much, and I really appreciate all that dreaming that you do.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that Delisank is none other than John Shores, the man we were talking about earlier who has perfected the spank on the Big Buck Hunter gun, partially inspiring the Jeremy hump. So who else have we got here? I think I got some messages from Danoli. Danoli 3, he knew all about Yellow Ninja, and he caught our cameo. I just wanted to clear that up because I didn't give him props for that. But I think he's been a hardcore fan that's been watching every related project to Dronage. All right, let's move on down the queue. Try and get as many people in as we can in the next 50 minutes or so.
Hey, Delisank, see you at the martini party in a couple hours.
Lol.
Okay. Maybe some no microphone question? Ross, all right.
I haven't been getting too many. Already been answered. Or stupid.
Eleven Sam wants to know, will Roth, you know, Productions ever be involved in like helping out other indie filmmakers getting their footage recognized? Would you ever be interested in setting up some sort of company like Troma?
Well, I get a lot of PMs and emails from people saying, "Hey, Kyle, you know, I make this, I make that," and they send me their footage and. I'm like, yeah, it looks good. Keep making your movies, and yeah, you should put that online and get an audience and whatever else. But people sort of talk to us as though we have some power in the industry, as though we are part of the powers that be. But we're actually not. We're very independent, and we're just some guys with a website that have made some movies. So. In terms of what we can do to promote other people's material, it's not all that much. We don't have a lot of capital, and we don't have programs that are geared towards that. But in fact, we were very excited about launching. This is in super beta stage. Pure Ownage Community Television. This is something that we're going to do through Bright Cove. So we're going to be taking submissions on videos that we can. Use on our Pure Ownage Television channel, sort of fan and community kind of stuff. So we're going to get that launched as soon as possible. And I think there's a lot of great stuff, like Firefly, for example, is a user on the forums that makes his own movies and is pretty good at special effects. And I've linked one of his videos from the main page. If you go to mainpagepureownage.com and you have a look at, the phrase at the bottom of the latest post that says "Don't spoil it for others," you'll see his movie, which I think is pretty funny. Shows you how serious the fans take Pure Ownage. So hopefully we're going to launch this channel soon and have not only a forum community but also a video community, and encourage everybody to grab their camcorder, start filming stuff, and I'm sure you guys can be very entertaining for everybody, including the cast and crew. So I look forward to seeing what you guys can come up with. Okay, there's one reoccurring question here I've been getting a lot of spam about is the Jeremy and Doug voice boxes. We're working on getting them on the Noob Store. We're going to sell them as soon as possible. So yeah, they're coming soon, basically. And we're very excited to start selling these. We put a lot of work into them. In fact, a guy working with us, Mark Single, has put a lot of work into designing these devices that say Boom Headshot and Ion Noobs, etc. So, stay tuned to the Noob Store. We're going to launch those as soon as possible. We'll have some news on the main site when we do launch them, as well as some other products that are coming to the Noob Store, i.e. The best mouse pad you've ever used should be some Ownage. So we'll get those out as soon as possible.
Okay, I think Vexed, you're next.
All right, I was just wondering, like, if you guys were planning to have any more forms of micro, like an MMO micro for Tadgy.
Well, you know, MMOs aren't really all that much about micro. They're more about the chat skills, right? So, you know, how can we have micro for an MMO player? I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. Season 2, I don't want to ruin anything. So, you know, just stay tuned.
I had an MMO micro.
I'm getting some messages here about Lemo. Is Lemo online? Can we voice him?
He was here earlier, but I think he quit.
Yeah, no, he's not here.
Oh, that's too bad. He's offline now. Okay. Yeah, anyway, Lemo is the guy that draws our comic, and we have some very exciting pages that I'm dying to release sitting on my desktop here. So the comic's getting, we're close to finishing the first issue. All right, let's keep going.
Will you be releasing those, like, as a physical issue?
Yes, we certainly do have plans to have a printed comic book available for sale on the Noob Store, so I think that'll be great to finally get that out. All right, I think, is it Taco or Shook?
Shook is next.
Taco. Yeah, I got a question about the Boom Hedgehog line. Where did it come from?
I guess, like a lot of stuff in Pironage, it just sort of happened. You know, we get on set and we get pretty excited, and you know, we all jump around, we all scream, and that's what comes out. And it's funny, that's a recurring question a lot, the Boom Headshot stuff, and I always like to just say that, you know, people aren't interpreting it properly, and you know, they're not really thinking about it contextually, and I think that the real humor behind Boom Headshot is in Joel's performance of FPS Doug, which is, you know, very stellar and that we're all very happy with. And so, the origins, you know, just the origins of everything else. And it's pretty much it's Joel that makes it really funny, not the words.
Okay. You know, Joel, have you ever thought of killing Jarrett or Jeremy to gain the lead of the role or show? Yeah.
Have I ever thought about killing Jarrett?
Yeah.
No, I've never thought about killing one of my best. Oh yeah, really? You have, dude? Shit. No, man. I don't. I still don't know how to answer the question. Jeremy or Jarrett? Who are we talking about?
Yeah, Jeremy. I don't know who he plays.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yo, this is for Jarrett or Joel. With, there's not many good computer games coming out, so would you rather me stay on computer or get the Wii or get the PS3?
Well, we can both answer it, I think that it, you know, that depends on your pocketbook, I guess. The Wii is very reasonably priced, and I think that what Nintendo's promising and the price that they're offering it at is, I think it's silly to not give it a chance if you're really sort of a gaming purist like I am. You know, it's really exciting what they're presenting in this opportunity to control your avatar in all these new ways and sort of communicate with the game itself and all these new cool ways. So personally, I'm really stoked for the Wii, and at the same time, I can see what the PS3 is offering, which is photorealism and whatnot. But I don't want to come across a fanboy for anything in particular. I'm really happy with what Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft has done for gaming in general.
But, you know, I think given the cost and what they're offering, the Wii is definitely something that people need to check out. And it might fail. It might not be successful. And maybe people are really comfortable continuing to play what they're used to, which is games coming out that don't offer anything new in terms of gameplay, instead just offering a more photorealistic experience. You know, personally, I'm with the Wii, but I know some people are graphics whores, and maybe they're the other way. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, and Joel, did you ever expect Boom Headshot to get big?
Yeah, I think at first none of us really expected any of it to get as big as it's gotten. And, yeah, when you have people yelling Boom Headshot at you in the streets and constantly requesting it, it's a little weird. And, I mean, I definitely never wanted to be known as a one-trick pony or anything like that and just be known for one line or anything, but, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, go down my school and keep shouting that all the place.
Yeah, it's funny that I think on our Wikipedia article, you know, we had a section that was phrases that are used or popularized by Pironage, and, you know, had Boom Headshot, Uber Micro, IO Noobs, all of the phrases that are ubiquitous now in the internet gaming community. And they removed that section because somebody, you know, all the Wikipedia people that know so much about everything had decided that, you know, Boom Headshot and Uber Micro were around way before Pironage. And that is just completely ridiculous to me because I was all over the internet before Pironage, and, you know, Uber Micro was, you know, sure people had used that phrase, but it was definitely popularized by Pironage. And, you know, it's really funny that even Boom Headshot, a lot of people think that it wasn't popular.
I saw one theory that it came from a show called Nerds and Geeks or something. Wasn't one theory?
Yeah, it's funny. People are always trying to rewrite history, but I can definitely assure you that you didn't have Boom Headshot being yelled randomly in CSS servers nearly as much as you do now before Pironage.
Yeah, I just like to throw in that, you know, a lot of people talk about that, Uber Micro came from here and Boom Headshot was originally written by blah, blah, blah. And I mean, when you're talking about writing two words, you must be talking about writing hey there. Anyone that denies that that Joel screaming Boom Headshot in episode 3 and 5 did not popularize that expression is a retard.
Yeah, well, thanks. And Jarrett and Joel, you guys fucking own.
Right on, man. Thanks.
Okay, I'd just like to say here that we have time for three more questions. We're almost out of time. I think we've been doing this for 3 hours now, so let's have the last three questions.
Sweet, I'm glad I got in then. Hey guys, I'm actually an avid Xbox gamer, and I was actually playing Gears of War for that two-hour queue. Thank you. And I was wondering if any of you had ever made somebody cry while playing online.
You know, I'm not entirely sure about online because I guess I can't see their face. You know, absolutely. And if you define crying as whining incessantly, I have absolutely made many, many, many people cry. Usually crying about how I must be hacking, or crying about this and that, and crying about how lucky I got, or crying about how much San Dimas High School football rules or whatever. So that's happened. In RL, I might have made some people cry because, as with many competitive people, I can kind of be an asshole when I play in person, and I get a little caught up competitively, so I might be a little mean sometimes in person. I think I might have upset some people, but I guess it depends. If you mean tears out of the eyes, maybe once or twice in person. If you mean whining, yeah, that shit happens all the time.
What about Joel?
Yeah, pretty much same goes here. I mean, when you're constantly beating some guy down and he thinks that he's better than you, of course his natural reaction is going to be that you're hacking or using some kind of outside force to be beating him. And yeah, they cry and whine and I laugh.
All right, cool, guys. And Joel, fuck anybody that ever kicks you off a server.
Honestly, I have to say here that that you know the part in Piranhas where FPS Doug has been kicked from the server and it's the fourth server or whatever, that is 100% true. It happens all the time that Joel and Jared are kicked from servers for hacking, and they always, as you know, they don't complain. It's a compliment. It's the best compliment ever to be kicked from a server for hacking when you are just playing the game and being as good as you are. I think that's a really funny concept.
All right, cool, guys. I'll definitely be on future TeamSpeaks.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for the question, Matt.
Hi, I just like to ask what TV programs that you like, because I like Lost, and I just wondered what you like to watch.
Well, I don't think that any of us own a television. Joel, do you have a television in Calgary?
I've been sucked back into the trap of cable television, unfortunately, and I don't watch it too often. Obviously, there's still the shows that I'll get online. British Office is obviously a big one, and the American one is turning out to be actually pretty funny, and one that I'll catch regularly. I haven't watched any Lost this season. I don't know. I've heard some bad things. I've watched up to season two, and yeah, admittedly, it's one of those shows that gets you keep coming back, but. I don't know. It's all right. It has its cheesy moments, as most Hollywood shows do.
Great. Thanks.
I used to watch a lot of Scrubs. I think it was great in the first two seasons, and it was kind of reminded me of the Parker Lewis Can't Lose, which I think was a great TV show in the late 80s. I kind of missed that style, and Scrubs sort of took that style and in the sort of ER or the hospital environment and had a lot of great characters, great writing. So I was into that. And then I, of course, the British Office will always have a special place in my heart. Oh, that series is just incredible. And the first two seasons of Trailer Park Boys, if you guys ever, you guys know about that show, I imagine, and what a great first two seasons they had. I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm not so much of a fan of their latter stuff. Other television, I guess I've seen a few episodes of The American Office in season 3, and they're pretty good. But honestly, I've been watching a lot of movies, and there's 70 years of great cinema to see. So don't ever find yourself watching television just because it's bland content that is just hitting your eyeballs and not making you think and get into the vegetative state of cable television when there's really nothing on. When you have 70 years of amazing cinema, you can go through and go renting your videos at whatever indie video shop or steal them online through the internet. But anyway, I'll pass the microphone to Jared and you'll get his opinion on linear narrative media.
Yeah, I just I also don't have a television. I haven't for years, so I'll just throw in that. I saw last year, again, the BBC original version of The Office, which was just 14 total episodes, which really, really blew my mind. I think it's probably the greatest television show I've ever seen. It's so funny for me that anyone that's listening and hasn't seen the original BBC Office, you really need to sit down and watch this and pay attention, because it's genius. And also, I'm a fan. Back in the day, I was a big fan of The X-Files. More recently, I'm also a big fan of The Sopranos, but who isn't? And I'm also a big fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I'm sure many of you are too. But other than that, I don't really watch much TV.
Oh, and we got to give a shout out to Firefly. Come on, Firefly the series and Serenity the movie. Joss Whedon, he always takes something and he puts a modern twist on it, and you never know where it's going to go, honestly. If you watch Buffy or you watch Firefly, like he plays with the audience very well, and he's a great director, great writer. I love the stuff that he makes. And I'm, you know, I want, what is Joss Whedon doing now? Honestly, what is he doing besides, you know, relaxing on his island? Oh man, yeah, that'd be great. Oh yeah. Anyway, I can go on and on about.
Jared or Jeff, have you guys checked out Ricky Gervais in Extras yet?
Actually, yeah, that's hilarious you say that, man. just last night I watched the first three. And yeah, man, I thought it was pretty funny. There's a lot of potential there, and not quite as funny as The Office right off the bat. It didn't really grip me that same way. But you know, I'm just such a fan of Ricky Gervais, and oh man, it had me really cracking up. You know, just seeing people like Ben Stiller and Kate Winslet outside of their standard roles. Oh man, yeah, it's really really good. So I guess I recommend that. I've seen only three episodes, but it's enough to recommend.
Yeah, I love seeing all the cameos and seeing the actors playing themselves. It's very funny. And second season gets amazing.
Great, thanks.
Awesome, guys. So we got two more questions. Let's do two more questions, then we got to call it quits. I think everyone's getting tired. Did somebody just link Grandma's Boy? Did somebody link Grandma's Boy? Who? Craiglow. Oh my God, he's banned from the community. That is a kick ban from the community. You linked Grandma's Boy.
I'm on it.
Actually, I just want to say, I guess this isn't a question, but it's brought up by the Grandma's Boy link. That I guess A, it gives me confidence when I see major studios that actually have money produce something so terrible. I believe that, you know, the Brofmeyer Productions will be successful. And B, I have to say that there's been a few moments where I have been so insulted by a piece of cinema as I was by that film. Because, as for those of us that have seen it, we all learned, of course, that gamers are immature, gamers are stupid and childish, they have no future, and ad infinitum, etc., etc., etc. So I would highly recommend not checking out that film if you are a gamer, unless you want to be so mad you would like to throw your monitor at the end of it, which is, you know, good thing I stole it, so fuck 'em. And yeah, don't check it out. It's not worth 90 minutes of your life.
It's good to watch the movie if you want an education on what not to do, and seeing, you know, all the you know, bells and whistles of great cinema, you know, like all the production quality, but stuff that doesn't work, an actor that has a gimmick that just doesn't work, and it's like, that is just not funny. It's painful. That joke did not go over. It's really like, you know, you take cinema and you take away everything that is intelligent about it, and everything that is, you know, funny about it, and you get that movie, and it helps. It helps if you're a gamer to realize this. That was just, we sat through it because we were just like, it was like a, you know, you don't want to see it, but you do. But it's like, it's terrible. Oh my God. No, not that joke. No, stop there. No, stop. Oh, okay. They did it. That's what the experience is like. Anyway, it's, you know, bittersweet. All right, let's move on.
Excuse me, I'm getting a lot of from people. Everyone wants to know who the fuck Myron is.
Who the fuck is Myron? That's a voice, Myron, and see if he can explain it himself. Where's Myron? I think his cardinal sin, Myron, should be his name.
Yeah, it is.
Alright, first things first. San Dimas High School fucking rules. Let's get that out of the way right now.
San Dimas High School football rules!
Second of all, a lot of people have been asking, U.S. premiere at any time, what's that going to be?
Oh, man, it's the question of logistics, honestly. Like, we could pack a theater in any city in the U.S., and we're dying to. And, you know, it's incredible that, you know, the border causes so many hassles, you know, getting T-shirts across the border, getting, you know, we can't actually work in your country because, you know, if we sell tickets for a screening in your country, that's working, and, you know, it causes a lot of hassles, and, you know, so anyway, we're dying to get into the States. Sorry, we've been doing Canadian premieres just because it's logistically simpler, but honestly, in season 2, episode 1, we need to do a tour, and we need a big school bus that we're going to paint up like the Noob School Bus. We're going to have game systems in the back. Jeremy and me are going to be in the back gaming the whole time. Big Noob School Bus go all across the States. That, anyway, this is our dream. I'm describing you a dream that, you know, hopefully we can make come true. And we're going to be owning some shit up in the United States.
You're welcome, man.
Nice. Want to say hello, Stacy and Kimo. See you guys.
Yeah, Myron, it's a shame you couldn't come to the premiere, episode 12. We would like to have seen you, but next time, I guess we'll come down to your part of the world.
Yeah, it's pretty cold down here. And you'll probably be welcome with open arms.
Hello.
That was Stacy saying hi.
I'm sorry, Kimo. Hello. I'm here to say hi to you.
Don't worry about it.
So, Myron, what's up with Chicago tomorrow?
Oh, man. You know, Grossman and Giants. Crying is going to be happening.
Yeah, it's going to be nasty.
It's going to be a bloodbath. Blocker and his big toe.
All right. So there's one person we need to hear from right now. His name is Viruktor. Viruktor, you've got voice.
Yeah? Hello? Can you hear me good?
You sound... It's good.
Yeah, I think Viruktor just missed what you just said there, Jeff. I kind of dragged him in. You know, we were just checking his mic.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yeah, I can hear you,
good, Viruktor.
Good.
Jeff, do you want to just repeat what you just said? I think Viruktor missed it.
Oh, I just said I can hear you loud and clear, Viruktor. I was just going to introduce you to the community as one of our original moderators. And in fact, I believe that you are member number 7 on the forums. We launched the forums in October 2004, I believe, and you joined a few minutes after. You were actually, I think, member number 5, but then you misspelled your name and you added the lot to the U, so you are actually member number 7. So you look like a huge noob compared to member number 5. But yeah, this is old school Pironage. This is Viruktor. He's been around forever.
No, it's not true. Actually, I put the wrong email address, and for some reason it didn't work. So I had to remake the name with the two dots. I don't know how you call that.
Wow, so you're member number 7 out of 27,000. So you look like a huge noob now, right?
Yeah, my first post is it's a proof that I was a big noob back then, you know. It's not available to the public. It's in the mod section. But yeah.
Oh, you moved it to the mod section, did you? Because you don't want it to be public?
It was vandalized, but we should move it back and sticky it, and you know.
It's a piece of internet history.
It is.
So Viruktor is speaking to us from Montreal, I believe. Is that correct?
It's true.
And what do you have to say to us tonight?
I've been a gamer for quite a while, since 4 years, I think. And it's been a real pleasure to be on the Pureonage forums, to hang out with all of you guys. I'm not going to name anyone because I'm going to miss out so much people. But I just want to say thank you to Kyle and thank you to Jeremy, well, Geoff and Jared and all the others that have been you know, around and supportive. And
just a big thank you from me, and you know, it's something that we haven't probably said enough, and that we really do appreciate everything you've done for the show, and you know, just an old classic. So just wanted to give you a big thank you.
Thanks. So yeah, everybody must be wondering why all this. Well, I'm actually going to tell everyone that I'm leaving the forums. I'm leaving the community. I'm not going to be on the forums anymore. Maybe IRC a bit. But, no, it's just I'm not a gamer anymore. It's not my thing. And, yeah. Well, but, I mean, it's been a real... I had so much fun. And it was like, you know... I don't even know what to say.
Veracta, you're making me cry. You're leaving.
I know, I'm sorry.
Well, man, good luck in the big game of RL.
RL is a big game, and yeah. I'll be on MSN, though, so I'll just... If you know someone who has my my address, you can ask him.
I have a story real quick on the shows on the States and getting shirts over and all that.
All right, Eska, let's hear about your story, and also if you could please tell us about the vehicle that you are currently driving.
I am currently driving, I don't know if you consider it the Pureonage vehicle, but there's pictures on my site if you check my MySpace or whatnot. Anyways, I was driving and, you know, I'm wearing this race helmet with the lights and all that other junk, you know. I just went all out for this season finale type thing. And I'm driving to the Border Patrol, and Isaac, some people know him from the forums, was in front of us, so they passed through or whatnot. So it got to be our turn, and they're asking us the usual questions, like what are we doing in Canada and all this other stuff. And they give us, I explain, you know, we're here for Pureonage, and explain what the show was about and, you know, where we were all from. So suddenly we get handed this yellow slip, and we were told to, you know, go to this area where they search you and all that. So we got out of the car, and this guy, I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, he's going to look at this Nintendo backpack I have and all these other things. He's going to think like it's a bomb and we're going to be here forever. And if some of you know, I'm like the guy with the Nintendo outfit, whatnot. But anyways, we get out of the car, and this guy is just looking at the car, and just like, he kind of like mumbles the words, you know, he's like trying to say what it is. And I was just like cracking up inside. So, anyways, we just got searched like hardcore, and that was just because our car, or the car looked, you know, out of the ordinary and stuff. I'm thinking, you know, because there's no other reason. I mean, one of the people that was with me in the car actually had a military ID. And, I mean, I don't even know why we got stopped, but it is a hassle to get stuff through. That's all I'm trying to say. And Isaac was just waiting for us down the road, and an actual truck went up there and said that he couldn't do that, and it was just a big mess just trying to get back in the States. It's always that hard.
Well, I'm glad you guys made it.
I mean, it's so easy to get into Canada, and I get nothing for it, but it was just so funny, you know, having them, like, take out all this stuff and wonder what it was, you know, what this car was, and, you know, all the gadgets and, you know, it was just hard explaining all that.
Hey, right now I've just got to say goodbye to somebody who is in the channel. Joel has to leave. So, Joel, why don't you say goodbye to everybody? Joel, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I was just being a big TS noob here. No, I just want to say thanks to everyone for coming out, and it's been an amazing experience, and I can't say enough. But somebody wants me to say something.
All right, man. We'll have you back in the next.
I just pulled that out of my pocket.
Can we get a? I can dance all day. I can dance all day.
Okay, here, yeah. Hold up, I'll see if I can get the button. Here, which one is it, Derek?
I can dance all day. I can dance all day. Try and hit me. Try and hit me.
Nice, it makes the request so much easier, doesn't it, hitting that one button?
Yeah, it's a lot easier doing it that way, man. I should keep one of those on me at all times.
Hilarious. Anyway, Joel, I'm so glad you could show up for the TeamSpeak, and we'll do it again sometime, possibly after the new episode. Here we got some love from the room here.
Yeah,
I'm going to pass the mic around.
We miss you, Joel. Come back soon, okay?
I'll be back soon.
Joel, I miss you, buddy.
Love you all.
Joel, you're gay.
All right, guys. Everyone, take care, and thanks for having me. And we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Talk to you soon.
Bye, Joel.
Okay, there's somebody else here I'd like to voice. Is Denoli 3 in the channel? Is he around, Denoli? I think he's in Australia, so I don't know if he is, but... Denoli 3 has voice rights. Denoli, what's going
on?
Hey,
man, sup?
Hey, I got somebody who wants to say something to you, man.
Denoli, this is Davin, a.k.a.
Holy
Yes
crap,
Sushi,
hey, man.
A.k.a. Man, I just want to say that on all of our little side little project, the Yellow Ninja stuff, and everything with Yoda-san and the Winding Gear forums and everything, man, you're right on the top. You're kind of the biggest fan. I appreciate it all. It's really important for me to continue in my work, having at least one person in the world appreciate it. And I'd have to say that you're probably the one guy, so thanks a lot.
No problem.
And just while Donnelly's here, I'd just like to make a public thank you as well. I think many people know of the Pure Onage archive, where it hasn't been updated for a while, where everyone puts all the sort of wallpapers and the fan-created stuff. I've been so busy, I haven't been able to update it for ages, and Denoli has worked so hard, updating it all, just for weeks and weeks, in fact, probably months over the summer, like, collecting all the stuff and uploading it all, and I think it went online tonight, and it's just, like, hours of work, so thank you very much, and everyone should go and check it out again. There's loads of good stuff there.
Thank you.
Wow, 47 new wallpapers. That's incredible.
Yes, quite the update.
You guys want to talk to someone next in the queue?
Yeah, we have time for one more question. This is the final question, so make it a good one, and let's see who's next. I apologize for people that are waiting in the queue that we couldn't get to, but we've been going for over 3 hours, and I don't think that everybody that is helping this TeamSpeak chat run can be available for more than that. So we're having a good time. I think everyone's having a good time, but unfortunately, it's got to come to an end. So, final question, please.
Hey, at the end of episode 12, it says Pure Onage will return in 2007.
My question is, do you guys plan on making a season 2 premiere, maybe like during the summer, so you guys get a little break? Or what do you guys plan on doing?
Sorry, in the summer? Are you in Australia?
No, I'm just saying, when do you guys think you'll end up making the season 2 premiere come out?
Okay, that's a good. I guess that's a fitting final question. We've have in mind that in, you know, March, early March, will be the season premiere of Pure Lunch. We want to make it an amazing thing. We want to take the time to make it worthy of being the season premiere. So let's just say March 2007 will be our first, you know, date for when we are going to be releasing new Pionage material. But we have a lot to do in the meantime. We got to upgrade all of our equipment. We have a lot of things to take care of that have been piling up. You know, check our webpage. We're going to be doing minor updates. For now that we're, you know, credited, we're out of character, we're going to be saying what's on our mind freely, and we don't have the confines of our characters to express ourselves. So look for a lot of great content in the meantime, but the first big episode is likely going to be in March 2007. All right. Well, thanks a lot for a great TeamSpeak chat. I'm glad we could speak freely this time, and so many great questions. And thank you for everybody for showing up. Joel, Derek, John Shores, all the forum classics, and everybody that came to my place to do this TeamSpeak. It's just been a great time, and 3 hours goes by like lightning. You wouldn't believe it. So I apologize for everybody that didn't get a chance to ask their questions. I know I'm getting a lot of PMs here saying, please just voice me, but we have to draw the line somewhere. It was a great time. Thank you very much, everybody.
Okay. Yep, great having you guys. Hopefully see you soon again for the next fan chat.
Thanks to everybody, Craig Locross, Iron Dragon, Janie, especially Kilthraka, for providing the server and keeping it safe from the would-be hackers. Morphe's Dimensions, as always, you guys are awesome, and I'm glad you guys took the time out of your busy days to help us out with the TeamSpeak chat. And Smokey, too. He's a good guy.
Indeed, thanks.
And the last thing I'd like to say before we sign off is San Dimas High School football rules. Good night, everybody.
Night-night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Night-in.
See ya.
Hey, can I shamelessly plug the radio now, Zim?
No.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Where's it gone?
I kicked it.
Oh.
Oh, no, I just turned sounds back on.
You're gonna pay, motherfucker. Right, people, before we leave, click on this link at the bottom, please. Everybody, as much as possible, click on the link. At the bottom, thank you. Cross, fuck you. Yeah.
Oh, what's going on? What's going on the radio? Is it on right now, or...?
It's on right now, yeah.
Okay.
It's been on the whole time for people listening at the bottom.
Broadcast the chat.
Should they rebroadcast it straight away now?
No.
Oh, and for anybody who's actually in here listening and has voice editing or is like pro at stuff and stuff, Pure Enies Radio should be coming up
hopefully soon-ish, like permanently and stuff. And we're going to need people to make sound files and stuff like that for the radio itself. So if anybody's good at that kind of crap, that would be fantastic. We could help.
Hi, guys.
Bonsoir, you missed everything.
What time is it there in Australia?
Someone just...
11 a.m.
Voice rights.
Yeah, that was all me.
It was all you.
Indeed.
Uh-huh. I can't turn off the Okay, glad I knew whoever did that.
That's it, guys. We've got 70. That's the most. That's a record. Keep listening for
That was interesting.
But, ow. Keep listening, bitches.
Yeah. No one listened to Pure Owens Radio.
Okay, I think I'm going to head off to the community channel server.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I'm going there too. Bye-bye.
I'd love to do like a mass kick right now.